Amber Ball here with you, 720 WGN. Lord, it made me feel so tired. Ariana Grande at Aretha Franklin's service. Before the day I met you, life was so unkind. You're the key to my... Sounds incredible. She got a lot of heat over the dress she wore. People said it looked like she was going clubbing. Jess, your reaction to that? Did you see the picture?
I am looking at the video right now. It's a full-on leather
outfit. Oh, is it leather too? See, I didn't know it was leather. The skirt's really short.
I think it's a dress.
It's a dress.
Yeah. It's more like shorts or something. It was too short. It was puffy around. Well,
it's a little bit short. It was a puffy...
It kind of puffs out.
Portion of the
dress.
Yeah,
right.
I'm still going to go with dress.
Hi, Patty Vasquez. Patty walks in the studio.
Yeah.
I have a really big favor to ask you.
Oh, what's that?
My favor is I forgot to mention that the musician we had on the air with the early sixes, Michael J. Foxy, will be opening for them on November 24th at Common Ground.
I have asked you a question.
Yes.
Michael J. Foxy. Is that just Michael Heidemann?
That's just Michael Heidemann.
Michael
yes.
J. Foxy? Did he give himself that name? Did somebody else give him that
name?
I believe. Is he really going by that name when he performs?
The history and etymology of, the derivation of that name, I'm not entirely clear on it, but it's something that works for him, I think, and it's a wonderful artistic choice that he's made.
It is.
Yes.
It was you, Jess? Really? But he is going, like, he's performing under Michael J. Fox.
Not just that, but he hosts a showcase at Bill's Bar and Burger right down here every Saturday night.
As Michael Heidemann or as Michael J. Foxy? He really does that.
He really, yes, he's performed on the Patty Vasquez show as Michael J. Foxy.
All right.
What is wrong with you?
It just seems odd to call yourself Michael J. Fox. There's t-shirts?
There's t-shirts. There's artwork and everything.
He's a very handsome fella. Don't get me wrong. Yes. He's just delicious.
I think it's I think it's also a little tongue-in-cheek.
Okay.
I think he, like, I can't speak for Michael, but I think that it's also kind of that he's got a little bit of, he's very humble.
Yes.
So that's why it's so weird, I think.
If Steve Cochran was calling himself Michael J. Fox, I go, I get it. Of course.
He's being ironic? What do you say? No. What do you mean you would get it?
Steve Cochran loves himself. That's Steve.
Right. Michael's very humble.
Michael's
so I think,
not that guy.
I
right.
think he's trying to go out of his comfort zone and trying to embrace how often maybe people tell him that he's a handsome guy. So he's trying to like...
You're not helping that.
No, I'm not really. I don't know. I think it's a wonderful artistic choice.
I think somebody... We're going to go with... Somebody called him that. It sounded great and fun. So he just went with it.
Right.
Now he said, you know what? I'm going to go by Michael J. Fox.
Maybe he's a big Michael J. Fox fan and is hoping this is one way to have him respond
to
a tweet.
Honor him. Sure.
Yeah, that as well. So, November 24th, Michael J. Foxy is opening for the early sixes at Uncommon Ground.
Excellent.
All right. Thank you very much for letting me do that. I appreciate it. Have a good night.
You didn't have enough time on your show to squeeze that in? You ran out of 17 minutes?
He wrote it underneath the bio for the early sixes, and I don't know if you ever do this. You're like, I'm going to take as much information as I can. I had a 17-minute show.
Yes, it was a little short.
So I was just condensing everything, and I managed to edit that out, unfortunately. I didn't see it is what happened.
That's okay.
So I apologize to Michael J. Foxy.
No, not a problem at all.
And also Michael Heidemann.
Michael J. Foxy forgives you, from what I understand.
Appreciate it. Have a wonderful show.
Michael J. Foxy holds no grudges.
No, he doesn't.
That's just
the thing is,
he's not his thing.
That's the incredible thing about Michael J. Foxy and Michael Heidemann, oddly enough, is like just he just kind of goes with the flow. And that's what's
music. An alter ego?
I don't think so. No? I think he's very
I think that would be neat. Like he comes out of the producer booth, now he's Michael J. Foxy.
Like, does Michael J. Foxy wear like a lot of rhinestones? What do you think?
I think leather. I think leather.
Hence the conversation you were just having a moment ago.
There you go.
All right then. Have a great weekend, Mike.
You too.
Matt, whatever your name is.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah. What's your name again?
Matthew J. Wolfie.
What? Rogers is Matthew J. Wolfie, and that's not pleasant at all. Thanks, Rod.
Well, I couldn't say Foxy. That was already taken.
That's true.
Fox,
Matt,
Wolf,
I like it.
Something.
Gone forever now. No, we're not going with that. Michael J. Foxy performing.
You got that?
I got it.
November 24th.
Wait a minute. November 24th. She wasn't just promoting November 24th, was she?
I think I heard her say November 24th.
Oh, I thought it was like this weekend. Okay. Well, there's still
time. Well, you know, these
tickets.
Artists, they got to book the gigs way ahead of time. You know.
Okay. I'm all discombobulated now.
Where were you when you started?
I don't know. Hey,
So real quick,
yeah,
we have a lot of really cool stuff coming up on the show. Jess has booked some pretty cool stuff tonight. After the 1:30 news, we're going to talk with a professor who went into Chernobyl's exclusion zone to do some research on animals. He's been in the Chernobyl area. It's still a huge dead area where there is nothing and nobody can live.
Yeah.
That was in, what, 86?
God, at least.
Right?
Yeah. But, you know, with my understanding, I'm not a student of the whole thing, my understanding is
86.
That was just a horrible disaster.
Oh, it was our greatest nuclear disaster ever.
Yeah.
Right?
And that, actually, that they probably should have extended that zone a lot more, and who knows what damage that has done over the decades.
So we're going to find out what he saw out there. At 2 a.m., we're going to speak with Sheila Dingus, who wrote an article. She covers, the website is advocacyforfairnessinsports.org, and she wrote about the NFL concussion settlement.
Mm.
And she says, don't think that this is some great thing, so we'll find out why. And at 2:30 a.m., do you remember the guy we talked to a few months ago about the feet that were washing up in Canada?
Yes.
The body parts?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just found some interesting news about the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, come on.
And how it relates. They're not finding feet out there, don't worry. But how the currents might relate to why that was such a big deal for all those years. So we got a lot of cool stuff on the front half of the show. And then later in the show, I want to talk about some interesting things. I saw a story about a woman who bought her daughter. They're a very wealthy family. She's independently wealthy.
Okay.
I think the current husband has wealth. I don't know if it's the same. But she has a daughter. So it's not his daughter biologically.
Right.
But they're a married couple. She bought her daughter for her sweet 16 or whatever. A $100,000 Porsche.
And not one of those little...
No, like a real car.
Well, she's 13.
No, 16. She's
16.
Or 17, whatever.
All right.
So she buys it for her. But the husband's all upset.
It's her money.
All right. Well, let's get into that later
on.
And then, I do want to get into the Louis C.K. thing a little bit. I've been struggling with that story this week. Louis C.K., part of the Me Too,
movement?
Cleaning of the house that we had about a year ago where, dominoes started falling and suddenly a lot of people came forward with their stories that they'd been living with for a lot of years about sexual harassment, sexual assault, all sorts of things. Louis C.K. was one of them. His story, we'll get into it later. It's different. Yeah. He was gone for 9 months. He performed this week, and there were a lot of mixed emotions about that. So I want to talk about that later as well. So we got a lot to do. The text line is back up this week, 312-981-7200. You can text, you can call. We'll be with you till 5 in the morning. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. That is Jennifer Hudson at Aretha Franklin's funeral service in Detroit on Friday. I think it might still be going on.
Yeah, I think I saw a few people waking up.
Was that not? I thought I had heard a 6-hour service.
Yeah, it originally planned for 5.
And it stretched to 6?
Yeah, easily. Yeah. Because I took a nap partway through, and when I turned the TV back on, it was on.
Now, when you hear some of the songs, you hear Jennifer Hudson belting out Amazing Grace like that. And clearly without, like, hey, that doesn't look... From what I've heard, from the small clips I've heard, it doesn't sound like it was overly produced. Like, hey, you got 2.5 minutes. You got to kick this out. You got to go.
No.
Amazing Grace takes about 30 seconds to sing, I believe. Yeah. And that sounds like it was going to stretch out for about 7-8 minutes right there.
Yeah.
Beautiful
and
incredible. And Jennifer Hudson has an amazing voice. But wow.
Yeah. It. I watched a large portion. I actually, if you had... No, I don't know who had it on cable. I don't have cable. We all know that story. Right. But I have the digital TV, and it was on Bounce, the Bounce channel.
I've never heard of Bounce.
Bounce is it's all African-American programming.
Okay.
And they were broadcasting the service live from start to finish. And then on my cell phone, I'm watching the McCain funeral service. Now, was at there, the time when it was going on together.
Was there a funeral service on Friday for McCain?
It was it was speeches in the rotunda.
Okay.
So yeah, the funeral service is...
Today.
Today, and that's where President Bush and President Obama are speaking.
Right. So he was lying in state.
He was lying in state in the rotunda. Yes. But there were the place was packed, and there were a lot of speeches. Vice President Pence was in attendance and said that the president asked him to represent him. But when...
And then somebody raised their hand and go, that's not how it happened. I'm sorry, but I heard the whole thing. And you weren't asked by the president to represent. John McCain requested you specifically because he didn't want your boss here. And then...
No, he didn't say that.
Then
no.
Vice President Pence just continued.
But there was what I considered an awkward moment when... this was before the family walked in, but McCain's mother... 106-year-old mother.
How crazy is that?
Was sitting there already. And the dignitaries, the frontline dignitaries, Pence and the House of Representatives, Speaker of the House, Speaker of the Senate, came in with their wives. And they sat down in that first row. Then the family came and sat down. But before the family came in, Pence walks over. He, like, instead of sitting down where he's supposed to, where he was told to sit, he puts down his little program, and he and his wife walk over and try to engage McCain's mother in conversation. I'm sure it was something very appropriate.
Pay their respects.
You know, paying your respects and everything. But she was out of it, and Pence was trying to whisper in her ear to get close enough to so she, I don't know if she has trouble hearing or what. But it just...
I'm going to go with that 106, yes.
You think so?
It's just a hunch.
Okay.
I'm going to go with trouble hearing, trouble seeing, trouble walking.
Probably.
Probably some trouble remembering certain things.
Yeah.
Because I have all of that at 46.
You had that about 10 years ago, if I remember correctly.
60 years on me.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to be happy to hear or see anything.
Okay. Then I'll go with your assessment.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, she wouldn't let go of his hand. And again, I think that was because of the what you just described.
Yeah.
But it also looked like she really didn't know who he was or care what he was saying.
Well.
And it just was a really awkward moment. I don't think he was expected to do that, and he probably shouldn't have.
Well, I disagree. I mean,
it was a nice gesture, but
you see the mother of the person or the wife or the children, you're going to go up and just express your condolence.
But if you don't know that person, if that person has never met you, and given the circumstance of what was happening, I thought it was a tad inappropriate. That's all.
How could it be inappropriate to go express your condolences? He didn't like.
Given the circumstance,
like
John McCain's wife. There was a report. I can't remember the full thing now. There was a portion there where she refused to recognize when one of the Speaker of the House or Speaker of this. I think it was the House. Said something, Ryan said something, or even when the vice president said something, and I can't remember, but there was a report that she ignored the reference. She refused to acknowledge.
Cindy McCain did?
Yeah.
Well, that's different, right? I mean...
But again...
Listen...
All right.
John McCain... John McCain requested that Vice President Pence be there. That was a request. It wasn't like he's showing up and grandstanding or anything like that. So sometimes when you talk to somebody at a funeral, they're going to be emotional. They're going to be thinking of other things. I mean, you can always have an awkward moment. I think that I'm going to forgive. I didn't see it, of course. You did. But
I didn't see the whole thing. That's the problem.
Sure.
But I saw that part when the vice president and the dignitaries came in.
Yeah.
And he went over to express his condolences. And then I saw the family come in. And then I kind of turned over to the to the Aretha Franklin funeral. Yeah. Then I turned back and I saw Pence speaking, and then I saw who was it? McConnell speaking.
Did Mitch McConnell speak?
Yes.
That's interesting because him and McCain shot him down a little bit.
Yeah.
McCain, you know, vetoed the big thumbs down on mm-hmm. the health care repeal act, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff. So,
but he, it very nice remarks from him, I thought. Very appropriate.
Yeah.
I
would expect anybody that, you know, speaks there will do a good job.
Well, yeah.
There certainly was a lot going on there. Well, we'll get back to that later in the show because coming up today is the final. I mean, this has been a week long. You know, we were just talking just last Saturday morning when we were on the air.
Mm-hmm.
His family just announced he was going to, you know, stop taking any more treatment.
Right.
And we didn't know if that meant months or what it could mean.
And then the next night
he was gone. And I talked about what I was hoping President Trump would do. We'll get into that later in the show as well.
Okay.
A lot of stuff coming up right now. Let's take a break. Then we got the news on 720 WGN. You're going to want to stay tuned. Mike Byrne, a wildlife ecologist from the University of Missouri, has been in the Chernobyl exclusion zone to study what's going on with wildlife there. We'll hear tales of what it's like in Chernobyl right now. This many years later, it was 1986, over 30 years ago. That explosion, still an abandoned area, left kind of as is. We'll hear tales of what life is like there now for the animals that have taken over. But first, we got to do the news headlines. Here's Roger Badish. Matt Rubala here with you, 720 WGN, 136 in the morning. Thank you very much for the news, Roger Badish. We'll be back to Roger at 2 a.m. So, very fascinating stories. Back in 1986, that there was an explosion at the power plant at Chernobyl, the nuclear power plant. They were doing a safety check. Things went wrong. They did it wrong. From what I read, they did some things wrong, design flaws, et cetera, et cetera. Suddenly, things go very badly. There's an explosion, and up to 400 times more radioactive fallout than the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima, according to the International Atomic Energy Agency. So a huge explosion, probably our biggest nuclear disaster ever. It's one of only two that have been considered level 7. The other one was the one that just happened in Japan a few years ago. Actually, that was back in, I think I read 2011 now. I can't believe that was that long ago. But there was afterwards, they cut off the area, an 18.6-mile exclusion zone where people are not allowed to live. And that is still held to this day. But wildlife has flourished there because the humans went away. And joining us on the phone right now is Mike Byrne. He is a wildlife ecologist at the University of Missouri at Columbia. He recently was there in Chernobyl. Hey, Mike, good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Thanks. I'm great. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone with us. How long ago was it that you were at Chernobyl?
Oh, I was there in 2014 in the fall.
Okay, so it's been a few years, and that was part of a, you went there to study the wolf population?
Yeah, the wolves, the distribution of mammals in general, with a special focus on the wolves, because wolves are cool.
Because wolves are cool. And was this partially to study how they're reacting to living in a radioactive area, or is this just about how animals survive in an area or thrive in an area where humans are no longer around?
One of the big things was to see how they're distributed, so the contamination isn't even. You know, if you go over here, it might be higher than if you go a few miles over that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were looking at, you know, does that influence where you find animals? You know, do they maybe avoid the high radiation areas or not? We wanted to test out some GPS collars on the wolves, and those were two of the big main things we were looking at, and try to get some population estimates for the wolves, and that data is still being worked on.
So what were you doing? I saw pictures. You were tranquilizing wolves that you could find and then putting collars on them so you could track them?
Yep. So they were GPS collars, and we had these special built collars that had radiation dosimeters built into them, which are these devices that kind of accumulate radiation over time. So each time you get a GPS point from the wolf, you get how much radiation it was exposed to between that point and the last point. So about every 35 minutes. So you can kind of, you know, map out the track of the wolf,
and
map out what it was exposed to, and kind of overlay that on a map of the radiation layer. And we wanted to see if that technology actually worked out. And it seems to have worked out pretty good.
And so what you found, though, was that the wolves are not avoiding areas with high radiation. They're going wherever the food is, wherever it makes sense for them to go.
Yeah, we found that the radiation really doesn't affect the distribution of any of the animals we looked at. If, you know, if it's good fox habitat, you're going to find foxes. If it's good wolf habitat, you're going to find wolves. They really don't seem to notice.
So the animals are thriving there because the humans aren't around, but how are they reacting to the radiation? Do we know if the population is dying more quickly than it should? Do we know if they're suffering from cancer and other things like that? I would assume they have to be, right?
You would think that, but there's not much evidence of that, honestly. As far as we could tell, I mean, I'm not a geneticist or a radio ecologist myself, but my colleagues are. And there's a bit of a debate right now as if you can actually see any effects on the populations. Mm-hmm. And a lot of studies seem to say that they're not finding too many adverse effects, especially now, after 30 years later. There's not much evidence of mutations. All the animals I saw had four legs and two eyes and a tail.
Yeah.
And seemed healthy. Population numbers seem high. So it's this really interesting dichotomy when you're there of, okay, here's this human tragedy and this environmental disaster on the one hand, but on the other hand, I look over there and I see wolves and European bison and moose and eagles, and it's kind of crazy.
That is interesting. And are there concerns that, so they seem healthy, they don't know apparently if they're dying earlier than they should or things like that, it sounds like. Is there concern, though, about mutations or like other problems that maybe these animals are going to, I know you said everybody's walking around with four legs and stuff, but just with their offspring and things like that as they keep producing children or producing other wolves, other animals from all these different animals. Are there concerns of what the reaction is going to be to their physical and their genetics, I guess?
Yeah, well, I don't want to overstate one way or the other. It doesn't, like, there's not, like,
they're not,
in 5 years there will be werewolves everywhere. Werewolves everywhere in 5 years.
That's what I want to hear. That's what I want to hear. Forget aliens. These animals.
Yeah. When I was there, I was kind of secretly hoping a wolf would bite me, just because I've seen enough movies and read enough comic books to know that getting
you were
bit
become
by
Peter,
a ray.
Yeah, you thought you'd become Peter Parker, basically.
Yeah, but like with wolves instead of spiders.
Sure, that's
spiders
what
are creepy. Yeah.
Well, in all honesty, though, and maybe just the research hasn't been done, but do you know, is that a concern that, you know, while these animals are thriving, more and more of them are there, and maybe there are going to be negative effects on their population down the road, or do we really think that maybe they're not affected? Because if humans were living there, it's still an exclusion zone. There's still high levels of radiation that are dangerous to humans in some areas there, correct?
In some areas, yes, but in all honesty, I personally probably got more radiation on the plane ride over than I did being in the zone every day for 2 months.
Were you monitoring? I saw pictures where you didn't appear to have any protective gear on. Were you monitoring where you were and where you were going and how much radiation was there and avoiding certain areas?
Yeah, we had dosimeters, kind of, you know, those little belt things that people who do x-rays wear on them all the time. So we could keep track of what we were exposed to, and we had some devices that would measure the radiation, but we really didn't try to avoid anywhere. So while the radiation is higher than you'd find in your backyard, I hope, it's not like the crushing levels that it was right when the disaster happened. It's kind of this consistent low dose. And so one of the things that's interesting in trying to figure out the effects this might have on say, the animals is, you know, we know what a really high dose of radiation will do to you really quickly. You know, you get zapped by the big fallout. It's the equivalent of being punched in the face. This consistent low-dose radiation that's out there now, where it's not super high, but it's just persistent and always there. It's the equivalent of, instead of me walking up and punching you in the face, I'm just poking you in the shoulder.
Okay.
Poking you constantly forever. And so the question is, well, does that have an effect, or do you build up an immunity to that?
Yeah.
And that's still an active area of research.
How close did you get? So it's a 30-mile, or no, I'm sorry, an 18.6-mile radius around Chernobyl. How close to the actual reactor did you go? Were you just on the outskirts of the exclusion zone, or did you go pretty deep in?
We were as deep in on the side that we could get. So the border of Belarus and Ukraine like splits the zone like right down the middle.
Okay.
So we were on the Belarus side, and for political reasons, you can't just walk willy-nilly over both sides. So the actual power plant is on the Ukraine side, right over the border. So I wasn't able to get down to where the power plant was. But I was in a lot of the really hot areas on the Belarus side. So we were in some of the hottest areas there, and I could see the reactor. There's a few like fire towers that I climbed up, which is probably not a good idea because they're not in the best repair, but you could see the reactor when you climbed up there.
Interesting. So you were relatively close, and you said you were in some of the hottest areas, and so 30 years later, the hottest areas are how hot? You weren't wearing equipment? I mean, it was, you know, it was a higher level of radiation than we normally encounter, but it wasn't so bad that you were worried that you had to be protected or shouldn't be in that area?
Yeah, so it's higher than you would just find walking around your house, but probably not as high as if you got an X-ray.
Interesting. So do you think a time...
I wouldn't drink the water. I wouldn't dig down into the dirt. I probably wouldn't grow crops. Mm-hmm. But for what we're doing, you know, we were just out there looking at the animals, catching the animals. We didn't need anything special for that.
Do you think there's a time in the next 20, 30 years where they start reopening and cleaning up that area? Has it dropped low enough? Or once you start digging in the dirt, things like that, is it going to be too dangerous and it'll stay? Because some of the stories I've read say for thousands of years there's going to be radioactivity there.
Oh, yeah. I doubt in our lifetimes people will move back into there for that reason, where yeah. It's just, you know, once you start disturbing it and growing stuff, and there's just a lot of unknowns on what it could do to people. Some people might say it's perfectly safe. There's a few holdouts that never actually left who live on the outskirts who are all still alive. But I can't see the authorities would ever say, yeah, come back.
Yeah.
At least not in the near future.
That's so interesting. Would you go back again? Was it, you know, I know ecologically you had all the studies, and so I'm sure that was fascinating, but just seeing what looks like, I would imagine, sort of like a movie set or a TV set from like a show like The Walking Dead or something, where there was, you know, an apocalypse and life stopped and stood still. And, you know, I imagine you're seeing all these buildings that are kind of crumbling, or weeds, grass, things growing in places they wouldn't. What was it like walking around what used to be a heavily populated human area?
Yeah, it was actually a really good description. I like to think of it if aliens came down 30 years ago and sucked everybody up. That's what it's like. It is just like a movie. It's just like The Walking Dead. So you've got houses with trees growing through them. The wildlife has taken over a lot of the structures. So you'll find wild boar, you know, making their dens underneath houses and barns. There's, you know, owls nesting in some of the bigger buildings. It was an agricultural area. So as you go around the zone, you kind of hit like these little villages. Mm-hmm. So they're not like these big, massive buildings, but it's just like these little farm villages, at least on the Belarus side. And it's you walk in the buildings and you'll still find like shoes and coats left up and some books and old food in the cupboards.
That's amazing. And then, so basically, yeah, just like they had to walk out right then and there.
Yeah, that was pretty much was it. After a few days, people came by, grab your stuff, and you're getting out of here. And it's been like that since then. And then you walk outside and it's like, oh, there's a moose and there's an eagle. It gives you a weird dichotomy of feelings. You know, on the one hand, you've got this solemn, sober human disaster. And then on the other hand, you look out and this is like one of the wildest places I've ever been to.
Yeah. I know you're studying like how the population thrives. Will there be studies on, and will this relate to humans at all for the future, on how living things can withstand nuclear radiation? Will there be studies that sort of come out of that type of thing?
It's hard to say. I don't know if it'll come out of Chernobyl from itself. That's probably more likely to come out of a lab. Just because this is our 10 equals 1, well, I guess 10 equals 2 now if you count Fukushima, Japan, we really don't have any other study site to compare this to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fascinating. So that was 4 years ago, and I don't know why we're just reading about it now. I guess because a wolf was just... But you saw the wolf leaving the exclusion zone, right?
Yeah, well, part of the reason it's coming out now is just because it takes a long time to write scientific papers and publish. In fact, before I got on the phone with you, I was literally working up more data on my computer before I started talking to you, because scientists leave exciting lives on Friday nights.
Are you teaching currently? Do you have classes at the University of Missouri?
Yep, just started a week ago, so I'm very happy that we have a 3-day weekend now.
I'll bet you are. And do you impress the kids by saying, you know, I was at Chernobyl, and they go, what's Chernobyl?
They're not impressed by anything. Millennials.
Well, I really...
With their Twitter faces and their space tweets and whatever.
spoken like a professor who has tenure, I'm guessing.
Oh, no, actually, I've only been here for a year and a few months, so I probably look younger than some of my students.
Well, that's a good problem to have. Mike Byrne is a professor at the University of Missouri at Columbia. Fascinating, fascinating. Will you go back? Is there plans to visit again at some point and compare?
So some of the grad students that were part of the team I was with actually had went back a few times since I moved a few places. So I was working at the Savannah River Ecology Lab, which is part of the University of Georgia, when this happened, and now I have this new job. But some of the grad students have gone back. It's wound down, but I would love to go back, and we're kind of exploring some ways to get some funding to get back there and do some things. Because once you get there and you start doing some research, you just come up with all these more questions that you want to answer.
Yeah, I can only imagine. One of the stories I was reading made it sound like the area, while people aren't living there, it is open to tourism now. When you were there people coming just to be like, wow, I want to go see what that's like? Are there people just being tourists in that area now?
Not on the Belarusian side. On the Ukraine side, there is, because you can take tours into the actual city of Pripyat and near where the reactor is. So on the Ukraine side, they actually do tours, but not on the Belarusian side.
Wow. That's pretty wild.
There's more cool stuff in terms of building, and that's where the actual city was on the Ukrainian side. So I think it gets more of a draw. I think it's probably easier for tourists to get into the Ukraine than Belarus.
Yeah, I would imagine these days. Well, that's fascinating. I really appreciate you jumping on the phone. Mike Byrne, a wildlife ecologist from the University of Missouri. We'll stay in touch. We hope to talk to you again.
Yeah, totally.
All right, Mike. Thank you so much. You can read those stories online now. As he said, the research is just coming out now, 4 years later, but pretty fascinating stuff. Chernobyl, it's been over 30 years, and the animal population is doing well. The people still aren't allowed. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN.
Still going on?
It might be. Well, what's your over-under, Raj, between... So we've got George W. and Barack Obama speaking today at Senator McCain's funeral.
Right.
If we had Clinton, then I'd say...
Well, he was there yesterday.
He was there, but did he speak?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Was that 2 of the 6 hours?
Well,
Bill
it wasn't
Clinton's
2 hours.
Known for going on.
Yeah. Well, he did... I saw part of it. I don't remember seeing that he had any prepared remarks. And while most of the people who spoke left the microphone in the mic stand at the pulpit, he held the microphone. He walked around a little bit.
Bill Clinton did?
Yeah.
He was one of the few that did that?
One of the few that I... of the ones I saw. Right. I didn't watch the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah. But he was, you know, talking about his, you know, how it was all fun and... A couple of the funny things that, you know, she did. And
What's interesting for me is I would say that President Clinton is kind of the president I came of age with. He got elected in 92, was there until 2000. So that was the first election I got to vote in.
In 92. 92, okay.
It was my first election. And just, I guess, my awareness of the world was really coming. It's, you know, high sure. school. And I remember Reagan, of course, his 8 mm-hmm. years. I remember George H.W. So, I mean, it was kind of end of high school, early college. So I wasn't as paying attention, I would say. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Reagan was there for 8 years. So I grew up in the 80s with Reagan. And I do remember Jimmy Carter a little bit, but not much. But Clinton, for me, I guess, is the one who that was the first 8 years of my real young adult consciousness. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, when I see and hear him now, and he sounds so much older, mm-hmm. and is looking older, but really his voice to me always sounds weak. I didn't hear him at Aretha Franklin's funeral, but just whenever I've heard him speak recently, I just think, oh man, has he gotten old? Mm-hmm. And it's not like he was crazy young when he was governor or president. He was actually pretty young president, but it just really sticks out to me when I, you know, I don't think George W. has aged that much. Of course, H.W. is in failing health now, but he's a lot older. And President Reagan, you know, was kind of in failing health a little bit at the end of his presidency even. But to see Clinton age the way he has just really sticks out whenever I hear him, like, oh, my goodness,
mm-hmm.
he's getting up there.
Yeah, apparently, and I didn't see this part, but apparently he played an Aretha Franklin song off of his cell phone.
Bill Clinton?
At his tribute. Hold on a second here.
Like he just held it up?
Yeah.
To show he's got some Aretha on the phone?
Uh-huh.
Is that his way of saying, hey, I'm pretty cool here?
Well, but he had been already talking about his relationship with her over the decades before he got to that.
I think you should remember in this time
now he's
about this
with
magnificent
the phone.
Woman. She worked her can off to get where she was. She took the gifts God gave her, and she kept getting a little bigger every day. So,
you hear it?
It's the best I can do. It's the key to freedom. God bless you, Aretha. We love you.
Was he dancing as he started playing?
No. He was just standing there with the phone up to the microphone.
Mic. He really does sound older, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
He always, I don't know that he's in failing health at all, but his voice has really weakened over the years.
Yeah.
It just isn't strong. Because he was such a powerful speaker. You know, that was kind of his thing.
He was.
He could captivate a room and go on.
But
and
he
on.
Always had that kind of down home.
Well, yeah, we saw a sound.
Yeah, exactly. Like this, exactly. Yeah.
I did not have. Oh, sorry.
Oh, let's not.
The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN radio on TuneIn. After the news, we're going to talk a little bit about the NFL concussion settlement and where it's at and whether or not it's really doing good for the players. That'll be interesting. First, let's get the news. Here's Roger. This is not from Aretha Franklin's funeral. I just want to make yourself at my home. Tell me where you've been. Although I can see them playing this song. Yourself something cold, baby, cheers to this. Maybe not. 312-981-7200. Matt Bobala here with you on 720 WGN. Sheila Dingus from AdvocacyForFairnessInSports.org wrote a kind of a scathing report on the way the NFL is portraying its current concussion settlement. It's a very interesting article, but we're having trouble efforting her at this time. It might be that in Tennessee it's 3 a.m. and she zonked out and just couldn't make it. We will try to reschedule. Coming up next week on the show, by the way, do you remember, Roger,
mm-hmm.
the gentleman named Danny Bonaducci?
Of course. Who doesn't?
Has no idea who that is.
I'm sorry. No, she does.
Jess, before we booked this guest, did you have any idea if I would have said to you, Danny Bonaducci, what would you have said? Be honest.
Come on.
2 weeks ago, before I brought this up in this book, and I said, hey, you know Danny Bonaducci, you would have said what?
Partridge Family?
You would have said that?
I used to watch
Seriously.
It when I was little.
All right. I'm impressed.
There you go.
That's because my grandma was into it.
Wow. That's the type of thing Danny would love to hear from the young kids these days. Yeah. Oh, yeah, my grandma watched that show. I know who you are.
I didn't really know much about Gretchen. I had to do a little research on her, but...
So, Gretchen Bonaducci, ex-wife of Danny Bonaducci, will be on the show with us next week. She wrote a sort of tell-all about her life. It's called Surviving Agent Orange.
Yikes.
Something in other tales of getting thrown under the Partridge Family bus about her life and times with Danny Bonaducci. She said he's got his radio shows. He's been able to talk about me all these years and our marriage and true and untrue things. This is my chance to tell my side of the story.
Well, that's pretty cool because we never did hear that side of the story.
No.
You know, we always heard from Danny on, well, he was here in Chicago.
He was.
For a long time.
He was.
Yeah.
He's been in Seattle for a long time. He's remarried. And Gretchen tells her stories. I will ask her if she recalls the night that I once spent with her.
Dun, dun, dun. We need to hear this. I don't think this is in the book.
You're going to have to. You're right. It's not.
And so because she has no clue.
I think she has no recollection of the night she spent with me.
That'll let you down,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, well, that's okay. We'll ask her about it next week. We'll see if she says, what are you speaking of? It's not as sordid of a tale as I'm leading on, but...
But it sounds cool.
Sounds better that way.
Yeah.
312-981-7200 is our number. After 2:30 a.m., we'll chat with our friend of the floating feet.
Gross.
We did a story a few weeks ago about... Because Jess and I had seen this over a few months. It took Jess a while to figure out who for us to talk to about this.
Yeah.
But there was a story about how up in Canada, there is an area of shoreline where like 14 feet have been found on shore. Not just a shoe, but like with a foot in it.
Yeah.
Over the last 10 or so years.
And nothing attached to it.
Right.
Like a leg or a body.
Right. And so our guest who studies ocean currents, you know, estimates there's a certain amount of bodies out there from ships, from plane crashes, from whatever. And just currents end up bringing things certain places. That's how things roll. So the Bermuda Triangle has been in the news.
Yes.
Just thought this was a good time for us to reopen that discussion with our friend. So we'll talk to him about that.
Sounds good.
Speaking of the NFL, there was a story out tonight that I was looking at that fascinates me. Do you remember... Of course you do. Papa John. Papa John's company, the pizza place, was a huge NFL sponsor. He had commercials with, well, definitely with, who was the quarterback? From the Colts.
Oh, from the commercials?
Broncos. Yes. Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning.
Did a lot of commercials with Peyton Manning over the years. Peyton Manning, I believe, was a huge franchise owner.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, and then... And so they were a huge, huge sponsor of the NFL. Then last year, with the whole controversy with the NFL, with the kneeling, and the ratings were way down with the anthem protests. And then Papa John, in a earnings call, and their earnings had been down, he blamed the NFL a little bit. And then he soon thereafter was ousted from the company, which I always was surprised by.
It's his company, isn't it?
Well, it's your company until you take it public, and then you sell shares, and you cash in.
You got a board of directors.
It's not so much your company.
Yeah, right.
Unless you own over 50%, it's not yours no more.
Yeah.
The ongoing battle between Papa John's and its ousted founder, John Schnatter, is the news story that will not go away. The saga has it all. Pizza politics, boardroom intrigue, and football. This is from Yahoo Finance. On Friday,
I know. I always had trouble with his last name, too.
I want to say Shatner. That's why. Because you look at it and you think of Shatner. But it's Schnatter.
Right.
Sued the Papa John's board and CEO Steve Ritchie, quote, to stop the irreparable harm those individuals are causing, unquote. This comes exactly 1 month after he sued the company seeking access to documents related to his ouster. Meanwhile, a Papa John's shareholder also sued the company this month, claiming it misled shareholders by failing to disclose bad behavior by Schnatter and other executives. This week, a special committee from Papa John's released a blistering statement about Schnatter, accusing him of untrue statements, undermining the company, and revealing that the Papa John's board, quote, specifically directed John Schnatter not to talk about the NFL controversy related to the national anthem on the 2017 third quarter earnings call. So maybe that's why he got ousted, is because they said, hey, don't even bring that up on this call. We don't want to get mired in that. That's not part of this, blah, 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 whatever reason they gave him. Then he went on the conference call. He blamed him. Schnatter on that fateful earnings call in November 2017 blamed Papa John's flat quarterly sales on the NFL protests and said the protests should have been, quote, nipped in the bud by the NFL much sooner. All this amounts to ugly PR war that is damaging both the company and Schnatter, and it's unlikely to get either party what it wants. Papa John's stock is down 20% in 2018 so far, and down 25% since November 2017 when he made his initial controversial remarks. He still owns 31% of Papa John's shares.
31. Okay.
So that's still a pretty big amount.
Yeah.
John Schnatter wants to return as the face of the company, even as the company devotes $150 million to scrubbing his image from pizza boxes, delivery vans, and corporate logos. I mean, that's the thing, is not it's only major. Was he the owner of the company, he was in every commercial. He was all over the place.
Yeah.
On that thing. I mean, he was the face of Papa John's.
He was Papa John.
That is expensive. Papa John's wants to move on from the scandal and wants Schnatter to go away quietly, but it continues to respond to his letters, which fuels the fire. On the company's second quarter earnings call last month, CEO Steve Ritchie said, quote, our future will not be defined by the words or actions of one person. But right now, that is what's happening. His public statements and PR campaign is successfully defining the narrative around the company, even if it's unlikely to get him reinstated as chairman. He resigned as chairman of Papa John's in July and shortly afterwards said he regrets resigning. Ever since, he's been attempting to rally support to regain control. The company, in response, adopted a limited duration stockholder rights plan, or poison pill, to prevent him from gaining control. Last week, he took out a full-page ad in the Louisville Courier-Journal for an open letter to Papa John's employees telling them, the board will not let me talk to you. I'm very sorry you all have to go through this. This week, he posted a second open letter on his website. What do you think his website is?
PapaJohns.com. org or something, or
savepapajohns.com.
Okay.
This time addressing the franchisees, he blamed the company's recent decline on, quote, rot at the top, namely new CEO Steve Ritchie. Papa John also accused Ritchie of, this is now it gets good, Papa John also accused Ritchie of protecting one of his direct reports who was having an affair with a fellow employee in IT who accessed documents of Schnatter's and gave them to Ritchie.
What?
So he's saying, Papa John,
right,
he's got the tinfoil out, and he's saying that the new CEO,
right,
one of the people that reports to him,
mm-hmm,
had an affair with somebody in IT, and that person in IT got some information about me and gave it to that CEO.
Wow.
Bam.
Aliens kidnap him?
It all sounds like a soap opera, and Schnatter didn't provide much evidence for his claims, but the company publicly responded, lending Schnatter's claims some legitimacy simply by acknowledging them. Quote, John Schnatter is making untrue and disparaging statements in a self-serving attempt to distract from the damaging impact his own words and actions have had on the company and our stakeholders.
Man, if you ask, it's like Mike, a little Peyton place.
Yeah. You got to update your references, Rob.
I'm sorry.
When was that show on?
60s.
Okay. Let's at least like get it up to maybe Dallas, a Dynasty, a Falcon Crest, maybe even get into
Real Wives of Los Angeles or something, Orange County.
Sure. You're really in the here and now.
There you go.
Good for you.
All right.
It's so Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
I'm so
something
sorry.
Something like that. Peyton, please, for goodness sakes. If you ask Mike Murphy, CEO of Rosecliff Capital, Schnatter's situation became untenable when he lost support of the board. I've been fortunate enough to meet John on several occasions. He got to a point where the board turned on him. I think for any founder out there who's raising money for their business, it's vitally important to have a team surrounding you that believes in you and wants to help you achieve your vision. I always thought it was weird that he resigned. It's so crazy. Listen, and here's where NFL players have a right, not a right necessarily. Okay, let's not say that because
take a breath and make sure you say it right.
You have an employer.
Right.
They have rules. They want you to think a certain way, whatever. I think the whole protest over the protest was ridiculous. These guys are not overly disrespecting the national anthem. They're certainly not disrespecting veterans by taking a knee, which in general is a sign of respect. Let's face it. They're making a silent, calm protest about things. And that got politically driven by other people who wanted to make something out of it. And it should have never become such a divisive issue in America. Well, it's crazy that we talk this much about that and that the NFL has suffered. I know friends who have stopped caring, who have stopped watching football games. Mm-hmm. I know people who are actually protesting it, and I think it's ridiculous and overinflated. But the fact that he got fired basically for saying that mm-hmm. was really surprising to me, and I wonder if there's more than even we're hearing now to that story. If that board was just, maybe he's driving them crazy. Maybe they're ready to kill him. Maybe it's like, God, why is this guy's face and everything? And maybe they've got PR or advertising people saying, well, there's only so much we can do if this guy's insisting mm-hmm. he's in every commercial. And maybe the board was to the point like, hey, we've kind of outgrown the Papa John thing. If we want this to grow and blah, 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 mm-hmm. we got to market ourselves different ways. And maybe once he did what they told him not to do, they're like, you know what? That's it. Why are we doing this? There's got to be, because just saying that, because with the way things were at the time,
mm-hmm.
the way the president was coming after the NFL and the way their ratings were going down and things like that.
Right.
Is it that outrageous that he's blaming a little? I mean, they were so heavily involved in the NFL. That is it that outrageous that he says, hey, I wish they would have handled that differently?
I think this happens a lot in corporations, publicly held corporations, where there is always going to be a battle between either the executive, chief executive officer, the person who's trying to steer the boat, and the people who are keeping the boat afloat with their funding or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that would be the board of directors. And I think this happens more often than not in corporations like that. Some have good relationships and some don't. And this is one that just kind of fell apart. And again, it came by way of an issue that should not have been an issue, but was co-opted by other people and turned around into the message they wanted the public to hear, and it became something completely different. Here's what I'd like to, and I was just a tad off on this, but it's still about this NFL thing. So you've got people on the field who are kneeling, who stay in the clubhouse, don't come out for the national anthem, and they're doing it as a protest about the social injustices towards people of African Americans and people of color.
Minorities.
How many times have you sat in a stadium, ballpark, football field, and hundreds of people all around you, when the national anthem plays, are sitting? They're on the cell phones, they are talking, they are calling for beers or for food, or they're walking to their seats during the playing of the national anthem. Hundreds and hundreds.
I'm probably always too late at these events to be but there for the
I'm,
anthem.
But what but I'm saying is...
Because I haven't seen that as much. You feel like people are pretty bad about it? I have, and it's disgusting.
I can't stand it. I always stand. I put my hand over my heart. I sing the national anthem. I think that what those that I see in the stadiums are doing disrespects the tradition of the national anthem playing at these sporting events. Because, again, remember, national anthem being played at the sporting events is a fairly recent event. In the early days of baseball and football, there was no national anthem played. You just started the game.
Well, what's our definition of fairly recent? I mean, ever since I was
I think just after the war, during or after the war, it started. And baseball and football's been around before that. All right, I'm sorry, fairly recent. 40s, Raj, that was before you were born, man, buddy.
You're really dating yourself tonight, buddy.
I'm sorry. But that's what's...
Well, what's really fairly recent, though, Roger, is the NFL players being on the sidelines for the national anthem. That's only within, I think, the last 10 or 15 years.
They used to wait for the anthem to be played with the ceremony, then they all came out.
But the NFL got into a marketing agreement with the Armed Services, and it was a tie-in there.
Right.
And that's the interesting thing about it is players didn't used to be out there for it. Listen, I think everybody should respect the anthem, take their hats off, stand for it, all those things. But if you are what a calm protest, taking a knee just to raise awareness of an issue. They're not disrespecting veterans.
And they're doing everything else everyone else is doing. They're facing towards the flag. And they may be singing the national anthem along or whatever, but they are in their desire to protest the injustices going on across the country. This is what they feel they can do while still showing respect to the national anthem, to the tradition of the national anthem being played, to people standing. I mean, these have been protests going on for decades. I know you don't remember, but the very famous picture of the, I believe it was the 1960,
talking about the Olympics?
Yeah, the Olympics, we had the racers, the runners,
right,
who stood for they were on for the gold and silver, and they raised their fists in the traditional, or what was being used by Black Panther Party and African American groups, as a protest, a black gloved fist raised, and that was their free speech. To say, look, we appreciate the opportunities that we've been given to be able to race, to win awards, and do all this stuff, but there are still injustices in the world that need to be paid attention to, and you can't just sweep it under the rug and let this be my speech, my whatever, that I will not forget, that this will not just go away.
And everybody getting so up in arms about it. I mean, that's your right to be upset about it.
Whatever. Well, sure.
But I mean, I feel that the country was founded on the idea of, fighting for a better country and protesting peacefully and all of those things that these guys are doing. And the whole idea of, if you don't like it, then leave, which a lot of people like to cling to.
They've been doing that since the Vietnam War.
Well, people,
before that.
But the thing is, if we did that back when George was running things, King George, well, if you don't like it, leave, then we wouldn't have the United States of America. We wouldn't have all of these freedoms. You know, people have to stand up and raise awareness and protest things in certain ways. Anyways, the whole point I'm trying to make, though, is that you and I are kind of on the outskirts of this because it seemed that most of America was pretty upset about these players doing what I think is a pretty innocuous thing. And so for Papa John to come out and complain about it a little bit, I just don't see how that gets you ousted, because really public sentiment was more on his side than anybody else. The NFL was facing all kinds of heat about it, and people were upset about it. And so if I were him, I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to blame it on this because, we are so heavily tied into the NFL. Now, I don't know if the board thought that's going to harm our relationship with the NFL. To me, at that point, the NFL needed them more than they needed him. But
do they still have that contract?
No. They pulled back. They are still heavily advertising on the NFL, but like on local broadcasts.
Oh,
the national pizza deal went, I think, to Pizza Hut. They switched that. Right. So now
the individual franchisees, the groups within the major markets where the teams are.
It might still be national advertising, but they're focusing it more, like on pregame shows or things like that, or on the local areas, I think.
Right.
They're not the national pizza guys that they were, and I think Peyton Manning got rid of his franchises. Okay, quick break. Yeah. News is next, 720 WGN. Michael J. Foxy making an appearance in the producer.
I saw him walk by here with his whole entourage.
Yeah. He's here late at night, probably putting out a new album. It's going to drop sometime this week.
Yeah.
Phillies in a fight for first. Are they really? I think the stupid Cubs blew that game last night.
They did. 10th inning. They're not getting the runs.
They're getting runs in bunches, and then they're not getting nothing for a long time.
Exactly.
Jose Quintana actually had a great game, so that was nice.
Okay. Where were the bats?
Well, they weren't there tonight, Robert.
Yeah.
But the problem is the Brewers and the Cards keep winning.
Yeah.
I mean, the Cubs had
three and a half, four games behind,
and they didn't really gain any ground.
Nope.
Anywho, Philly's in a fight for first. Now it's time to let them know how the air is up here. Cubs Phils Sunday at noon on WGN TV. 312-981-7200 is the number. Hey, let's talk about the Bermuda Triangle, because who doesn't want to do that?
Yeah, seriously, at this hour of the night?
And we have never, I'm going to say, Roger, in the 5 years, whatever we've been here, first time we've done Bermuda Triangle talk.
Really?
I don't think we've ever covered.
I thought it wasn't, we didn't have a guest about it, but I think in a somewhat...
Maybe in like one of the MH370, some missing plane thing, maybe
it's kind of in there.
But this is talking about it.
Oh, okay.
Right after news headlines, here's Roger Battish. Oh. Matt Babile here, 720 WGN, 238 in the morning. By the way, Texter lets us know, and thank you for writing this. 630 writes, Papa John Schnatter had used a racial slur during a different call. And that is, so I found the New York Times article on this. Now it makes much more sense. That was why he resigned. He resigned hours after he apologized for using a racial slur in a comment about African-Americans during a conference call in May. So that was different. The apology was prompted by a report in Forbes that described the call, which was with Laundry Service Marketing Agency. And he talked about how Colonel Harlan Sanders of Kentucky Fried Chicken always used that term and never got in trouble for it. I don't know the term that he used. They don't say if it was the N-word or not. And they say, early. So that was in May of 2017. Mm-hmm. It was in November of 2017 where there was the conference call where he complained about sales being flat. Yeah. So it was a much different. And now it makes much more sense as to why he did resign. Because Major League Baseball suspended a promotion right away. There was all sorts of fallout from that. Okay. Now we have our history more correct. Thank you, everybody. 312-981-7200. Our friend Curtis Ebsmeyer studies the currents of the ocean. We talked to him a couple of months ago about that crazy story about feet washing up on the shore in Canada. And he tried to explain to us, that the world's a big place and a lot of bodies end up in the ocean and currents take things certain places. How does that relate to the Bermuda Triangle? We're wondering. Curtis is on the phone with us. Hey, Curtis, how are you this morning?
Fine, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to talk to you again. Thanks so much for being on with us again.
Well, Chicago's where my family's mostly from. My mom and dad went to Senn High School.
Oh, excellent.
Did you
grow up here at all or no?
No, I come back to see my cousins and things, and so Chicago's very close to my heart.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate it. And where are you located? Where do you live, Curtis?
In Seattle.
Okay.
Excellent. Right next to the University of Washington. Kind of on the water.
Okay. Well, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the triangle, because it's in the news a little bit. The people were just printing me some stories about the Bermuda Triangle, and we haven't talked about the Bermuda Triangle much ever on the show. I know that there was always a famous history of ships sailing, planes disappearing, and I don't know if that was something I grew up hearing about that was mostly just myth, or if that's a real thing, and if so, is it sort of related, possibly, to currents of the ocean?
Well, the Bermuda Triangle isn't really an official geographic name, but it's pretty descriptive. There's an area there called the Sargasso Sea where seaweed collects, and it's one of the things that guided Columbus to America, and it's a kind of weed that floats around and around but never sinks. It's like if you put a billion styrofoam plastic cups out there, and you had animals living on it, they would always be there. So there's that collection spot out there, but there's a lot of information about very large waves out in that part of the ocean. One of them has to do with the replacement of the Titanic. There was a ship. What's not really known too much about, talked about, is that when hurricanes come over the United States, they often, you know, over the East Coast, they'll head out into the area of the Sargasso Sea, and they'll regenerate because it's warm water out there. So you wind up with regenerating hurricanes producing waves over 100 feet tall.
Wow.
The point is a lot of people go sailing out there and they just don't realize how nasty that part of the world is.
And is that related to winds as well? The story that I have about a show that was being done called What on Earth by a science channel talks about that there's the wave cloud formations and stuff create these huge quick wind bursts and wind gusts, and that would maybe explain why planes would have gone down in that area.
Yeah, you wind up with a confluence of different weather types. The most famous one is a ship that I happen to know the man who captained the ship coming across the Grand Banks where the Titanic went down. She was about the same length as the Titanic. And a hurricane had regenerated, and he saw a 100-foot wave coming right at the ship. And it made the front page, I believe, in the Boston Globe. He turned the ship into the wave and measured it over 100 feet tall. But the ship didn't sustain too much damage because he got the ship headed straight into the wave. So he saw it coming. But if you're out in that area, you may not see things coming. So
I imagine, especially during a big storm.
Oh, yeah, or just... Yeah, you figure, well, the hurricane, this is like a hurricane. You figure, well, it got dissipated. Well, that happens over land, but when the hurricane gets back out over water, it starts sucking up heat again and can regenerate to its original strength. Mm.
Interesting. What else is going on in the world of sea currents? What else are you following right now?
Well, one thing that's been going on for the last 50 years, oceanographers have been measuring wave heights. They have actually the instrumentation and put it out there, and they've been finding that the waves around the world, the Atlantic and the Pacific have been rising about a few percent every year. So in the last 50 years, you wind up with waves that have gone up in height 5 or 10 feet. And that's because of global climate change. So we have winds that are increasing in strength as well as waves that are getting higher. And a lot of people who go sailing just don't realize that the ocean is a much rougher place than it was when they might have been growing up.
Is that during storms, or is that in general the waves are bigger?
In general. Hmm. So we have the hard information. Now we have satellites that are whizzing overhead, and they're measuring wave heights. And they're finding a lot of waves over 80 feet tall.
And that's happening. So when you say, oh, there's an 80-foot tall wave, I would think, wow, that must have been some storm. But you're saying that's just not related necessarily to storms.
Right. It's rougher weather. Not necessarily, probably a derivative of storms, but the trouble is that the ocean is, now we have the information, and we actually have the satellites that measure the top of the wave to the bottom of the wave, and the satellite doesn't really tell you what produced it. It's just that there are a lot of waves like that, and the ocean is just a lot rougher than people think.
Now, a lot of goods are still transported by large ships overseas in shipping lanes. Is there a concern that as global climate change affects things, that it's going to, rougher weather like that, is that going to be more of a norm, and is that going to make it difficult to get goods across the sea?
the container industry is really very good about designing their ships. They have ships that are they're designing that are 2,000 feet long, and
2,000 feet long, seriously?
Oh, yeah. The USS Missouri was only about 1,000 feet long. But these modern cargo container ships are twice that length. And, you know, the industry wants to make a good profit, so they tend to stack the containers pretty high.
Yeah,
and the ships get kind of tippy. So it's probably in a course of a year, the industry ships a few hundred million boxes, you know, those big steel boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
A few hundred million, and they lose overboard probably a few thousand.
A few thousand of those huge shipping containers go overboard every year.
Correct. And
do those Coast Guard sink to the bottom of the sea, or do they float?
Well, that's a really good question. Nobody really knows, because when they go overboard, there's no law that says you got to keep track of it. So what happens is some of the cargo containers float. I know of one that floated for about 9 months. It's not unusual for a cargo container to float for months and months. Most of them probably open. The doors pop open at the end. And one of them held 5 million pieces of Lego right off England. And those are still floating around. We have, that was 1997. I'm still tracking tub toys that fell overboard in 1992 in the North Pacific, and they're still washing up after 25 years. So the container may have sunk, but the contents might keep on going.
That's pretty amazing that things will last that long. I imagine some sink, some float. What is the longest track of time? You just said 25 years later.
Mm-hmm.
What is the longest track of time you've heard about things floating up on an ocean beach? And you know that was from 20, 30, 40 years ago.
The longest piece of, it's a piece of plastic. It's that old World War II plastic. Was lost in 1944 from a PBY aircraft off the Philippine Islands in 1944. And it was discovered in the stomach of an albatross about 2004 up in the Hawaiian Islands. And we did the computer simulation, and it had been floating for 60 years.
That is insane. Well, last time we were talking, we talked a little bit about the, what did we have? We had a huge, God, what is it called? I can't remember the word tonight. When we, tsunami, the tsunami from years ago. And I think you said last time we were chatting that you think there's still going to eventually be a lot of bodies that start floating up that might be just in the ocean right now, or body parts or things that floated out to sea when that happened. Do you think that those are still trapped in current somewhere and eventually going to end up somewhere? And where do you think eventually we see things start taking place on the shore?
Well, Oregon, Washington, Alaska, but a lot of people just don't ignore it. So you see a shoe on the beach. There's a tendency not to look inside the shoe, but there may be the last remains of a loved one in that shoe. Another thing that happened recently was, you might remember Hurricane Sandy, Superstorm Sandy. We just had a real estate sign wash up from Sandy. It washed up over in France after 5 years.
Get out of here.
That's true. I talked to, it's a true story. You
made
just
it
never
all
know.
The way to France.
Yeah, it went around the North Atlantic at least once. So we had a homeless shelter that washed from Newfoundland over to England. Crossed over in about, I think, 3 or 4 months.
What do you mean a homeless shelter?
Yeah, this guy in Newfoundland had built a like a little houseboat.
Okay.
It's about maybe 50 feet long. And then he abandoned it, but it got loose and it went over to England.
And it was still floating like it was just a houseboat?
Yep. Yeah, it's amazing.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I just did a summary of 15 years of stuff that drifted across the Atlantic. And it's just, we had a, you know, the F-14 fighter jets. They had the Top Gun exercises off Florida. A couple of the pilots did some crazy stunts, and they accelerated vertically to 20,000 feet, broke the sound barrier, but then their compressor went out and the plane belly flopped on the ocean. And one of the tails, those big cat-like tails, washed over to Ireland after 3 years. It's now in front of an Irish bar.
We didn't come get that back, huh?
Well, I'd love to go to that bar and actually just go in and have a beer, but the thing stands about 12 feet tall. You know, these are really big airplane parts. Sure. So imagine yourself sailing out in the North Atlantic, and you suddenly see an aircraft wing right up on the wave, and on the wing there is the Grim Reaper. That's the name of the squadron.
Oh, that would scare you. Since you follow these things, I wonder, do you talk to people that are on ships that cross the ocean, and do they have stories about weird things that they suddenly pass by and see floating in the ocean?
Oh, yeah, I get things all the time that are just hard to believe. I was talking to, actually, my washing machine repairman came, and he was a World War II vet. This was like 10 years ago, and he says, you know, Kurt, I was out on the ship in World War II, and we found a guy that was still in his parachute, and all that was left was a skeleton.
Oh,
so I said, he said it'd be impossible. He said, but there were dog tags on it, so it was probably in the Navy's record somewhere, but I'll probably never see those records. But you hear these stories, and you say, well, some of them might be urban legends, but they're not all urban legends. And once in a while, I'm lucky enough to run down a story and actually find the individuals involved.
Do we know what is the longest amount of time somebody has survived in the ocean? I thought I read a story just this week about somebody who survived for 2 or 3 days after they fell off a ship before they came back and got them. Do we know what is the longest time a person has survived at sea?
Oh, yeah. It's up in the year. It's over, well over a year. There was a man on a rubber raft who is a medical doctor. He survived all the way across the North Atlantic. In World War II, there was several cases that were almost a year long. We go back into the 1800s, there were Japanese fishermen that survived 2 years on fishing vessels, disabled back in the 1800s, just disabled right off Japan, and they washed up to British Columbia. So it's a couple of years is probably not unusual.
Why or how does somebody do that if they don't have water on board?
Well, you learn that you actually can drink seawater, not in the sense of drinking out of a glass, but if you dip your finger in the water, in the seawater, and then let it drip off a little bit and then lick your finger, that will keep you alive, but it won't kill you.
Wow.
Well, so there's ways if you you take a paperclip, you can catch a fish with some thread and some paper clips, and also fish like to attach to whatever you're drifting on, and so what you do is you just wait a little bit and then run your hand over the outside of your rubber raft, and you're going to get some slime that has a lot of food value. So if you keep your wits about you and just kind of think about it a little bit, you can survive at sea for a long time.
Well, that's pretty fascinating stuff. Curtis Ebsmeyer is our oceanologist. Is that the correct term?
That'll work.
Oceanologist friend, and he tells us about the currents and crazy things in the news sometimes. I appreciate you jumping on the phone again with us. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
All right, sir. You have a great weekend. We appreciate it. 312-981-7200. News coming up in a few minutes here on 720 WGN. We're actually going to go right from Aretha into John McCain's funeral. It's a double feature. All That was the Clark sisters from Aretha Franklin's funeral on Friday. John McCain coming up today. He's got a double bill with Barack Obama and George W. Bush providing eulogies. Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN radio on TuneIn. After the news, is it your money or is it our money when it comes to how it gets spent? Talk about that, about you and your partner, your spouse, your loved one. Is it yours or is it ours? Roger Badish.
It's not mine. I'm broke.
I know that.
Wow.
I hear you. I hear you, brother.
I feel your pain.
We'll get into that after we check the news. Was this also in the... This was in the original Pitch Perfect, right? Jess, you've seen Pitch Perfect, haven't you?
Maybe?
You didn't see Pitch Perfect?
Is Anna Kendrick in that?
Yes. I have a big crush on Anna Kendrick.
I think so. She is kind of cute.
She's
I do like her.
Very cute.
Man, I was
very
really
going to...
If you had not seen it and I had seen it, then there's something wrong with
Jess
the world.
Jess has not seen it.
She has not?
You have not seen it, have you? You'd remember if you'd seen Pitch Perfect. Just admit it.
I've seen all three.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know.
My problem is I watch a lot of movies and then I fall asleep halfway through them.
I know that. I understand that. I have a wife who does the exact same thing. Here's the rule for everybody out there. If you haven't seen the Pitch Perfect movies, mm-hmm. there's three of them.
Right.
Just see the first one. The other two, not good.
Right.
Well, you know what? That's terrible because I didn't even see the third one. Because the second one was so bad, I was like, I'm not going in for the third.
I
love Anna Kendrick. Love Anna Kendrick. But man, those were a couple of paycheck movies.
All right, spoiler alert. If you see number one, you've seen number two and three.
That's certainly true for number two.
And
number one
true
is
for
so
number
good.
Three.
You really got to see the first one.
Very really cute. Good. Very cute really movie. Good. Yeah.
Very good. Okay. So there was a story I was seeing on Twitter. I was seeing people Twitter fight about some celebrity. I don't know who it is because it's not one that I know. It's probably some reality show star. And she is wealthy. I don't know if she's wealthy because of reality or if she's a businesswoman or why. But she's wealthy. And she has a husband and she has a daughter. Husband, not the father of her daughter. But they're married. Okay. The daughter turned 16 or 17. The mom buys her, and this is why I'm guessing they're reality stars, because it doesn't sound like normal people. The mom buys her a $100,000 Porsche. Apparently the dad, who is not her biological dad, is very upset that she did this. Now, Roger, I started throwing this out there without getting into much detail, and you said her money.
Yeah, it is her money. And it's her child.
Jess tells me it's from Real Housewives of Atlanta. Thank you.
They're all over the place. It's her money. She can do what she wants with it. I don't know what her relationship is with her second husband, right?
Current. I don't know.
Let's put it that way. Current husband. I would think that if she's got an issue, or if he's got an issue, he should talk to her and the father of the daughter, because it's their decision. They're still raising their child. Now, if the current husband has obtained, has adopted the daughter, as his own. Then, yes, he does have a say-so in things that are bought for her or not bought for her and things that she's allowed to do and not allowed to do. And
if he has legally adopted her, if he lives in the house, helps her get off to school every day,
helps her
with homework, if you're part of a family now.
Is she living with them?
We're married, but you have nothing that you get to say about, I don't know. I assume they're living
I don't know what their relationship is.
I don't either.
That's the thing.
But
so I can't really say.
Roger, you earn money here at WGN each week.
Yes.
And do you ever go home and...
By the time I get home, I don't have any of it in my pocket, but go ahead.
Say you did.
Say I did.
And the missus mm-hmm. said, well, you're not buying that. Would you dare say it's my money?
No.
Okay, then.
But we've been married 42 years.
So what?
But that's not our relationship. I don't know this person's relationship that you're talking about.
Of course we don't know.
It's different.
If we had to know people's relationship, we wouldn't be able to judge anybody and what fun would the world be. Come on now, Raj. We're going to paint broad strokes here, and I want to know how we feel if you're married to somebody. Do you ever get to say, it's my money?
Given the situation you described, I think that she is within her rights.
Well, of course she's within her rights, but
yes,
there's nothing legally wrong with anything she did. And of course you could say, well, it's her money. Of course it is. But we're in a marriage. We're in a society here. We've made a compact that we're going to live our lives together. And if you start with, yeah, but that's my money and I'll make those decisions, you stay out of it. That's a rough way to set that
up,
isn't it?
But it's more than just her money. It's her money and her daughter. It's not his daughter.
Right. It's not his daughter. But in general, and I don't know this couple, so we're just talking in general terms.
Okay, in general terms.
If you marry into a family,
right,
you're going to take those kids in as your own as well. And, of course, you're going to respect the boundaries of the biological parents. But but are you telling me when she's got laundry or she's got homework to do, he gets to go, that's not my kid. I'm not doing that homework. I'm not washing her clothes. That's your
kid. Well, one would think that if she's how
that
old again? 16? She's 16? If the mother had done her job, then that child is doing her own laundry and doing her own homework.
You have to just rebut me at every little
Well, because
thing.
It's this is a...
You know what I'm saying. In general,
of course I know what you're saying.
Our new spouse to treat our kids as their own and be helpful and be part
Unless
of
he's a trophy spouse.
Oh, my God.
And if he's a trophy spouse, then I don't think either the wife or the daughter care, as long as he brings home the bacon.
She apparently has enough bacon of her own.
I know. That's what I'm saying. And I bet you that kid's got a trust fund, you know, when she turns 18 or 21 or whatever.
A kid's got a $100,000 Porsche.
She'd probably go out and buy a whole garage full of Porsches.
Jess, will you turn on your microphone, please? Because I need a voice of reason in here.
Apparently, I'm not helping any.
Someday, when you're married, do you ever see yourself saying, well, that's my money? Or if your boyfriend made some big purchase right now, you guys live together. If he
Correct.
Made some big purchase
mm-hmm.
and suddenly and it was something you didn't, you know, agree with, would you be like, what are you doing? Or would he be like, hey, that's my money. I'll spend it how I want. That's just not how relationships work well, is I think what we're getting at.
If
he went and bought an 85-inch TV for $3,000 and some huge new video gaming system without even telling you he was doing it, and suddenly it was there, there's no way you don't come home and go, dude, what are you doing?
I would definitely question it for sure.
Yes, you would. And that's the girlfriend saying that as nicely as she can. Because you wouldn't just question it. You'd probably lay into him a little, wouldn't you?
Well.
All of us know that's just not how relationships work well. If you're in the habit of saying, it's my money, A, then either you got to think about how you're handling things, or B, then you've got a partner who... You guys really draw some battle lines where you feel like you have to go, hey, it's my money, I'm going to do what the hell I want. Then you guys aren't on the same page on a lot of things. I would try to avoid pulling the it's my money at all costs. That is a no-win.
Yeah.
Let me put it this way. In my relationship with Bridget, it's our money.
Right.
We both work hard. To bring income into the family and make those purchases that jointly will help the family, whether it's food, clothes.
$100,000 Porsche.
Yeah, right. I cut out a picture of one and put it up on the wall. And she says, what's that? And says, that's my $100,000 Porsche. And you know, she laughs. But in a relationship like the one you described, where apparently there is an inordinate amount of money on both sides, I've got to side with the, it's her money and her daughter, and she could do what she wants.
Of course.
If they were broke, let's assume that the current husband and his wife have a loving and caring relationship that she did not have with the first husband. And let's say that the household is warm and inviting and sharing and caring and 50-50 or 100-100, depending on your point of view. And if that's the case, yeah, then, yeah, he's going to stand there and go, what the heck were you thinking? But if it's what I think it is, she could do what she wants.
So what is what you think it is?
That they both have a ton of money to throw around. She's probably still getting money from the first husband. If the girl is 16, the first husband is still paying support. And that she can do what she wants with her daughter. If she is the main caregiver of that child, then she can do what she wants.
Well, my assumption is because they're married, they live together.
Right. Doesn't necessarily mean that they've got a shared relationship with the daughter.
Hey, Matt.
Yes.
I'm reading a story here. Candy, who's the wife, she's married to this man.
Candy, oh, there you go.
Named Todd Tucker.
Okay.
And when he turned 45, she threw him a big birthday bash that had everything Michael Jordan themed. And they had a party in a gym. There was a drum line, a drill team performing, and a lot of stuff. A lot of, like, really extravagant stuff.
So she has also spent extravagantly on him. Is that the point of that story?
But did he get $100,000 Porsche?
Maybe this is just jealousy. Maybe
yeah,
just,
see?
What is she getting that for? I want to look at it as take the people out of it that are, you know, the celebrities. This is just our stepping off point. Whether it's $100,000 So Raj, say in my family mm-hmm. that I decided to buy Jack mm-hmm. a $10,000 car. Okay.
Wow.
And
they
I just
still
went
make
and
those? Go
bought
ahead.
It. Well, it's a very nice used car. Right?
Okay. Yeah.
But it's $10,000.
Right.
But I suddenly just went ahead and did that.
If you did that without checking with your wife,
yeah,
you would be driving that car to a new life somewhere.
So why is it okay for the other?
But that's because of your relationship with your wife. It's different. I know you guys. There's no way that would happen. Okay. No way.
So
this
in
is
general,
not,
in marriages, you don't do that.
But this is not your typical marriage. It just doesn't seem like it is. But
well,
again,
you know why
based on just
like
what
is?
You've told me.
Because she just went and bought a $100,000 car.
Right. And that tells me some things.
At most, I'm going to make an assumption here, but and this is just my assumption, most couples that have a lot of money, like, usually they end up getting divorced because all they do is fight over money.
See, and that is so interesting and crazy because all we fight about at home is our lack of money. Honest to God. And I know money doesn't buy happiness, and I believe all that. However, like, literally 80% of what our concerns are in the world mm-hmm. are how the hell are we going to pay for that? That is probably the most common thought of, if you did, you know, you do those search engine clouds, and it comes up with here's all the words, and they put bigger the words you search for most. How the hell are we going to pay for that would dominate everything else in
exactly.
our lives?
And when they say that the number one fight amongst couples is money, which it is, it's you're right. It's not about who's got more. It's how the heck are we going to pay for these things that we need as opposed to that we want.
But it's interesting
for most people
that Jess feels that the rich people tend to fight about money even more. I wonder if that's true. What if we suddenly become rich and then we're still just fighting about money?
Well, but it's because the more money you have, the more troubles you have. That's my belief. You can't. All right. You just bought a used $10,000 car for your son. What does that car have?
Probably about 80,000 miles on it, I would guess.
Okay, but it's got, 50,000. What, four wheels?
I hope.
All right, doors.
I spent $10,000 on it, darn well better.
Doors?
Right.
Seats?
I hope.
It has an engine?
Should.
Headlights?
You would
brake
think.
Brake lights?
What are we getting to?
What does a $100,000 car have? Four wheels.
Better ones doors. Of all those things. It has status. That's what it has.
And that's all you're paying for, which means a car is a car. If you need to spend that amount of money on a status symbol to make you feel good and to get from point A to point B, then I'm sorry, you have too much money.
Well, I think that's all relative. Some people have a lot of money. They've worked hard. They've earned it, whatever.
And God bless them. And a lot of them are very frugal with their money.
That's their call.
Right. But you can't... Sorry. I have a thing about that.
You seem to.
Yeah, I do.
I don't, you know, begrudge them having that much money or how they want to spend it.
It allows you to be able to do certain things.
What I'm curious about, though, is the decision to say, hey, I'm deciding we're going to do this.
Right.
And if you don't have that conversation with the partner, now if you have the conversation, say, hey, I know you don't think I should, but I really want to do this for my daughter because we came for whatever.
Yeah.
And then you at least had the conversation, but it sounds like she just did it. And he's like, I can't believe you just did that.
And he's probably going along the lines of what you just said. His concern about that is probably more the fact that she did not consult him ahead of time.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
And I would.
Then you've got an issue far beyond the money issue. You have an issue about a relationship.
Well, and that's what I think it comes down to.
Yeah.
And that's how, if I was in that relationship, if I'm remarried and there's a child in the relationship, I wouldn't end up legally adopting that child because she has her biological father.
Right.
But I would treat that child as my own and love and care for that child as my own. And I would be greatly offended if that was expected and applauded and wanted, but then when it comes to certain decisions, hey, that's not your kid, this is my money, this is what we're doing, I'd be really ticked off at that.
I agree with you on that.
And then I'd say, well, you better buy me one, too.
Yeah. And she says, you got enough of your own money, go get your own.
I don't have that much money, honey. You make more money, and I'm more than fine with that, as long as you're buying me a really nice car.
Well, maybe in the divorce, I might give you some.
815 says, as a father of four, a 16-year-old is going to crash that car within a year and a half, so paying $100,000 for one is stupid. Well, let me say this, 815. Not only are they likely to at least ding it, but the insurance on a 16-year-old driving a $100,000 car has to be insanity.
Where is this again?
Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Atlanta.
Hotlanta. As my sister calls it, Hotlanta.
Could you imagine the insurance?
Yeah.
Our insurance doubled when Jack got his license. Doubled.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. And the upkeep? Are they going to make the 16-year-old pay for all of that out of her birthday money?
Roger, when you have the kind of money that you throw down $100K on a Porsche for a 16-year-old, you apparently got enough money for it.
I know, would be my guess. I know. What's she going to do? Too much money. That's what I'm saying. Because if I didn't have that much money, I wouldn't have to worry about a Porsche and how much the insurance is and the upkeep.
I understand, but I'd rather go with having too much and having those concerns. I'd like to see that side just for a little bit of my life. I'd like to see those problems of having too much and not knowing how to handle it properly. I've seen this other side where there's never enough and you're not sure how you're sending kids to college. You're not sure how you're paying for the insurance. It goes through the roof, all those things. I get that side. I've lived it for long enough now. I'd like to just figure out how tough it is to make that $100,000 Porsche decision. I'd like to see those problems. Just
all right, let me ask you this.
That works out.
Let's imagine that you've got that money.
People. Yeah.
Would you wouldn't
be buying any of those kids a $100,000 Porsche? That's for sure.
Now, this is what I'm saying. So, do you think you would retain the same values that you have as you are now, or do you think your value system would change when you have that money?
It would change.
Well, here's the thing. I'm already 46 years old,
so
I've lived a lot of life. I think if you have worked for a long time, struggled for a long time, and then get the money, it's going to be different than if, say, I was 22 years old and drafted out of college into the NFL and got a $14 million signing bonus. I could see where when you're young and haven't suffered and seen a lot, you're thinking that's going to last forever, and you blow through it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas at the age of 46, where you've dealt with the IRS, where you've dealt with college worries and all these things over the years,
mm-hmm.
you're a little more sweet. Let's pay off some debt and sock it away.
Right.
And
okay.
That's certainly what I would be doing before anything else.
Right.
Trying
but Jesse
to pay off
just
the
said.
Mountains of debt.
So now Jess says.
Because Jess is really young.
Right. She would enjoy having that much money and would spend it.
It would change you, Jess? If you suddenly had, say, $1 million in your bank account, it would change you greatly, you think?
No, but I think generally if you go to having a lot of money and then going into a period debt or vice versa, I think it does have some impact on lifestyle and can change a person overall.
I mean, it would definitely change my lifestyle. If we suddenly had tons of money, the house would get fixed. Maybe we'd move. There would be things that would change, but I think that when you get to the age of me or Roger, you've lived so much of life, you've seen so many things that you're going to be hopefully a little smarter about it and not let it change you completely, you know?
847 says that it doesn't matter if the couple can afford to buy the car. Why doesn't a 16-year-old just need a $100,000 car, and that's the reason why these kids are called the entitlement generation. I don't know if that's necessarily true, because I'm still considered a millennial, and that would fall underneath of it, but I don't necessarily think that I'm entitled to anything.
Well, and here you are working your second job, and you're working hard to work your way up in the world, and I think that if we look back over the years, there have always been rich people who did ridiculous things for their kids. There have always been good parents, there have always been bad parents, there have always been good and bad people in the world. And whether or not this is the entitled generation or not, I think has less to do with $100,000 cars than just maybe a general shifting in the way kids are raised or kids view things. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world about how kids are being certain ways. I don't think the $100,000 car is directly related to that. I think you could look back to the 40s, 50s, and before, and the people that had lots and lots of money probably were skewed in certain ways and did things for their kids that the rest of us would shake our heads at and be like, why in the world are you doing that? 90% of people who win $1 million or more are broke within a few years. 815 says that.
Wow. Yeah, and I think we talked about what you would do with a lot of money. I think we've been in that
happy room.
Yeah, yeah. And I would actually, because of my age, which you've been so kind to point out.
You're welcome.
I would spend the money on other people because I'm okay the way I am. I would try to take care of my children and my grandchildren.
I'd do all that, but I'd also have some fun too. And you would too, I would think.
All right, so I promised our grandkids. Now I'm going to start crying.
Oh, Roger.
I need to take a break.
I promised our grandkids when I had cancer that if I pulled through that I would take them anywhere they wanted to. And they wanted to go to Disneyland. And I'm still trying to save up for that.
Yeah. Well, good.
So.
Good for you. Hey, you know what?
Mm.
Here's my little life lesson for you.
Okay.
There's always two ways we can look at things.
Mm-hmm.
We can look at them as like, oh, crap, or we can look at them as an opportunity.
Right.
If I were you, I'd say, thank God they didn't say Italy.
No, we spent our money before I got sick to go to Italy. So.
Well, there you go. But just think if you said, if I survive this, I'll take you anywhere in the world. And they're like, we want to go to the moon.
Right.
Call SpaceX. And be like, oh, crap.
Can we enlist in the Space Force, Grandpa?
Here's the thing. I can't quite afford the moon. How about if we go to Chuck E. Cheese?
You know what I would tell them? I can't afford the moon, but I'll give you the stars.
Aw. And they'd be like, that's not good enough, Grandpa. Well, you promised!
I know.
Well, my birthday's in 26 days, and it would be real nice if I got $100,000.
Well, just so you know, Roger and I talked that over, and that's not going to happen this year.
See that That's pizza okay. box in front of you? You see that pizza box in front of you?
Promise you 100 more years of pizza.
There you go.
Late night, Friday night.
That will work just fine for me. Plus, I got both of you guys.
Aww.
Worst birthday ever.
And then, when all three of us hit the lottery, then we can do a show from Disney.
Oh, yeah. They used to do all those, remember, back in the day?
Yeah.
They used to do live broadcast all the time.
I flew out there with John Williams back when I first started. We did shows out there when they opened something up at Disney World. It was crazy back in the day. All right, let's take a quick break. We got to get to the news next, 720 WGN. A little bit after 3:30 in the morning. Let's get the news headlines now, Mr. Battish. Matt Pabala with you, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here at WGN Radio on the 18th floor, 303 East Wacker. Headline on CNN News says the EU is moving to get rid of daylight savings time, Raj.
I saw that.
I like daylight savings time.
Why?
Is it daylight savings time or daylight saving time?
Saving, no S. Yeah. The S is saved.
That's comedy at 3:39 in the morning.
Hey. Tip your waiter.
I don't know. It's kind of something to look forward to every year.
I know.
You know?
But which part do you like best? Turning the clocks back for an extra hour or having to wake up an hour earlier when you have to turn them back the other way?
Well, of course, it's always nice to get the extra hour of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So this is fall back, so we're getting the extra hour coming up, and we lose the hour in the spring.
Right.
But, so it's nice to get the extra sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It's not nice to have the days even shorter. Well, what do? We end up this. I got to remember how it actually
works.
As
the amount of daylight increases, we lose an hour of sleep. But yet, since we're getting more sunlight, there's actually sun when we wake up still.
So the days are getting shorter now, and what we're going to do is we're going to push the clock back. So that the sun is coming up earlier, so the sun is staying out later.
So if the sun normally rises at 8 in the morning, let's say, for the heck of it, 8 in the morning, and you turn the clocks
back,
it's now going at 7 o'clock.
And that allegedly was to make it light out earlier for the farmers?
Mm-hmm.
Was that really, is that a myth, or is
that
real?
I always thought that, but I think I've done research in the past, And actually, that doesn't even play into it.
Even back then, it didn't?
Well, everything that I've looked up, stuff that's on Wikipedia or any of the other, daylight saving time sites, because more and more communities are deciding they're just tired of this.
Well, and I think we talked about this a while ago, that on the East Coast, the Far East Coast, what would be the furthest East Coast?
Newfoundland?
Newfoundland's in
Canada. Oh, I mean, in the United States, that would be Maine.
Maine?
Yeah.
That some states want to add a fifth time zone.
Really?
Because millennials and the need for workers and good talents come out that way. Kids don't want to go live out there because it's getting dark so early.
George Hudson, good old George, proposed the idea of daylight saving time in 1895, and this actually got its start in Europe.
Okay, and why?
All right, let me get to it. Rationale. Industrialized societies generally follow a clock-based schedule for daily activities that do not change throughout the course of the year, time of day that individuals begin and end work or school, and the coordination of mass transit, for example, usually remain constant year-round. In contrast, an agrarian society's daily routines for work and personal conduct are more likely governed by the length of daylight hours and by solar time, which change seasonally because of the Earth's tilt. How's your tilt doing?
Tilty.
North and south of the tropics, daylight lasts longer in summer, shorter in winter. Duh. Synchronizing? No, not synchronizing. Synchronously. No. Never mind. By setting all clocks in a region to 1 hour ahead, I usually can read almost any word. This one just has me stumped. By resetting all clocks together in a region to 1 hour, why can't they just say together? To 1 hour ahead of standard time, individuals who follow such a year-round schedule wake an hour earlier than they would have otherwise. They will begin and complete daily work routines an hour earlier. They will have available to them an extra hour of daylight after their workday activities. However, they will have one less hour of daylight at the start of each day, making the policy less practical during winter. And then it just goes on and on and on and on and on and on.
So it was about starting your day earlier, having an extra
daylight.
Okay.
And actually, during the school year, the schools like that because then the kids go home when it's still light out. So
but during the school year, we're moving to daylight saving time
right.
where it's going to get dark even earlier.
No. Because yes, we have less daylight, but because we shifted things an hour earlier, getting out of school, there is still daylight for another couple of hours so kids can get home okay. You just are waking up when it's dark.
Wait a minute.
And, hold yeah.
on. Roger, right now, say the sun is rising at 7 a.m.
Okay.
When we move the clocks back.
It's 6 a.m.
Which means it's if it was getting dark out at 5, it's getting dark out at 4.
But it's still dark out at 6 a.m.
Okay, but either way, if we're moving the clock back, we're not getting them extra hours in the afternoon. We're moving it up, the sunlight.
You're giving them more you're giving them more daylight at the end of the day.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
No! You just said we're moving the clock back. We move it back in the fall, which
right.
means that it will get light out earlier, which means it will also get right. dark out earlier.
All right, hold on. So the time the sun rises and sets does not move with the clock.
Yes, it does if the time is donated
right,
by the clock.
Let's say the sun rises at 7 a.m. Just stop.
All right.
It rises at 7 a.m.
Yes,
all right?
Yes.
If
let's say
I move the
at
clock
seven, let's say it
back
rises
to
at 7.
Six,
rises at 7 and it sets at
right.
5. Let's say that's what's happening right now. Rises at 7, sets at 5.
Okay,
you tell me what happens next.
If it rises at 7 and sets at 5, and I move my clocks back an hour,
mm-hmm.
but the sun still comes up at that same time, I'm not changing when the sun rises or sets. I'm just changing the time on my clock.
Right.
So hold your fingers up like that. Come on. So the sun rises on with your left finger. This is great radio, folks. Sun rises with the left finger, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And sets with the right finger, right?
Okay.
Okay, now move your nose over your left finger. Go ahead.
God.
All right.
All right.
Now move your nose 1 hour to the left. It's now 6 a.m., that sun's still coming up later, and it's still setting later.
What are you talking about? You got to move the fingers, too, because you changed the clock.
But I'm not changing the sun. The nose was your clock.
What are
All
you
I know is it's
about?
Dark. Look, I have to go downstairs to the basement. And I have to change the automatic timer on the outside lights every year so that the lights will come on earlier.
Earlier when?
In the morning.
No, no, no.
In
come on earlier when? Earlier at night?
No.
Because it got
that
dark
they'll stay
earlier.
On. They'll stay on later because it's still darker.
Because we're having less daylight overall.
Right.
Yes. But when we move the clocks back,
all right, Jess,
it is so that it is light out earlier.
How can I assist
which
you?
In turn, means it will also be dark out earlier.
We need an expert on this.
Yes.
We need an expert. Can you find one?
Time zone expert for next week, Jeff.
Time zone
Explain
expert.
To Roger.
Time zone expert.
Speaking of expert, well, here's an expert on time zones right here. Wally is on the phone. Wally, where are you?
Hey, at? Matt, how are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
How are you, Matt? I'm doing well. I'm in Beijing, China right now. I just flew from Busan, South Korea, and I've got about a three-hour layover until I fly to Shanghai.
Oh, my gosh. So what time is it in Beijing?
And talking about...
Yeah.
Yeah, so the time here in Beijing is it's 4:45 on Saturday afternoon.
4:45 p.m. on Saturday afternoon.
Right, I'm 13 hours ahead of you now. Oh. In Korea, I was 14 hours ahead. So you got the 1 hour time difference of daylight saving is easy compared to 14 hours and 13 hours ahead of Chicago trying to do that math all the time.
I can't imagine how you keep up with that or how you even function when you're supposed to be in meetings and stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of meetings. And I was just talking with someone. I'm celebrating my Labor Day starting with a ride at 5 a.m. from the hotel in Shanghai to a steel mill about an hour outside of Shanghai. So it'd be a fun Labor Day for me.
Yeah, no kidding. And how long does it take you to get adjusted when you get from country to country to the new different time zone?
You know, quite honestly, maybe a day or two. I mean, I'm used to this. I got to Korea last Monday, and it was pretty good. Probably by Tuesday or Wednesday, it was pretty good. I mean, now, so I'm on this now. So now the tough thing is coming home and then trying to adjust back to Chicago and then leaving again, you know, in a few days. So, yeah, I'm always a little bit mixed up.
I can't even imagine. So, you know, we don't get too much into business with you, Wally, but you're in China. You're going to a steel mill, you said. Well, there's a lot of talk about tariffs and steel and things like that these days. And I have a buddy who lives here in the U.S. who works in steel. And I just saw him a couple weeks ago, and I said, oh, how's business going? He said, it's going great because people want to buy steel in the U.S. all of a sudden. So how are things for you business-wise with stuff like that?
It's good. My client is buying steel. They make equipment all over the world. So for steel that they're buying in China, using in China, it's not an issue. The tariffs don't make any difference for them. But where you got steel coming, obviously, from other countries into the United States, that's where the tariffs are really hitting, you know, companies that are trying to import it. So the thought is, let's try to buy domestic steel, which I think is exactly what Mr. Trump is trying to do.
Yeah.
You know, prop up some of the local businesses. So I can tell you it's something that a lot of companies are taking a look at, you know, buying American if it's going to cost more to bring stuff in from overseas.
So it's hurting companies, though, that because that was the story, right, that China floods the U.S. market with cheap steel they overproduce?
Correct.
And
yes.
If you're working with a steel mill there, is that the type of thing that they do? Do they produce steel that ends up going to the U.S., or are they just producing it domestically?
No, I mean, they'll sell to anybody they can. I mean, the allegation is that whatever their costs are, that the Chinese government is propping them up a little bit. And so their costs are a little bit below what it's actually costing them is a little bit below what it would really cost them because the government is propping them up and paying some of their costs. So they can hit the market saying, okay, we can sell steel for you, pick a number, $500 a ton, where their real cost is probably $600 or $700, but they can sell it for $500 because the government is, you know, the Chinese government is picking up that extra couple hundred dollars so that they can push it outside the country.
Mm, interesting. And how has this affected business, all this talk of tariffs and the trade issues that we're having? Is it affecting international business like you work on much, or is it all evening out in the end?
I think it's probably evening out. What it is requiring, it's requiring, you know, an extra calculation as to what the costs are going to be, because if you can't get the quantity, in this case steel, that you need domestically, then you're going to have to bring it in from outside. So then the question is, well, how much can we get domestically, and then what are we going to have to make the difference up in with outside steel, with foreign steel bringing in? So, you know, it's just more of a calculation and trying to figure out your whole supply chain and where you're going to get what you need.
And how are companies like in China that maybe did a lot of business with the U.S. that now there's a little hesitation, are they waiting to work things out with the U.S., or is it possible for these companies to work with other countries instead as a workaround if they feel that they're having trouble with the U.S.?
They're going to try to. They're going to sell to whoever they can. And if it turns out that they can try to sell steel possibly to another country, and if there's any kind of value-added services, so maybe they're selling rolls of steel from, you know, China into Hungary, just as an example, mm-hmm. and then Hungary's cutting it out, and then those cut parts are coming into the U.S., you know, that's something that may be an option, whereas if that stuff was actually being cut in China, the tariffs may apply to that. I'm not positive exactly on that mm-hmm. on that example, but you know, there's people trying to be creative in how they're, sure. they're getting what they need into the U.S. And it affects the Chinese companies as well as the U.S. companies.
You know, the economy is roaring here, at least in certain sectors, and you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, wages aren't necessarily going up, but the stock market certainly is, and things like that. Internationally, do you find that the economy right now is doing well, or is it doing better in the U.S. than it's doing elsewhere? What's your overall feel on things?
I think it's doing better in the U.S. than it is elsewhere. I think it is robust, but I think in the U.S. right now, I think we're kind of firing on all cylinders, or so it seems. And you know, the biggest issue is you know, getting labor and getting the right labor. Not that there aren't those kinds of issues with other countries.
Sure.
I've said many times, if you want to be employed and have a good job and almost name where you go in almost any country in the world, be a truck driver or a welder. Those are two jobs. They're not sexy jobs, but my goodness, I mean, they're fairly high skilled when you really think about it. And yeah. They are in short supply around the world.
Yeah, certainly here in the U.S. too. Well, If you feel that the economies around the world aren't doing as well as the U.S., would your guess be that that puts President Trump in a pretty good position for the demands he's making in as he's trying to negotiate new trade deals?
My personal opinion is yes. I think it is. I think the economies, though, man, are still doing well, but just not as well as the U.S.
Yeah.
I'm still seeing, you know, at suppliers and even with my clients at their locations, you know, getting skilled labor is difficult. So I think, you know, the other economies are doing well, but I think the U.S. economy just seems to be right now, like I say, firing on all cylinders across pretty much all sectors, as far as I can tell.
Okay, so Wally, we never talk serious like this the whole time, so I've got to ask you, you're going to Beijing.
I know. Yeah.
Or you're in Beijing,
right.
And you're headed to where?
I'm in Beijing, going to Shanghai.
Going to Shanghai.
Shanghai.
So yep. I know you're there for work, but you always get out and see the world and try to get a little of the local culture. What are you looking forward to doing in Shanghai?
Honestly, Matt, I'm not going to have much time. I'm not going to get into late tonight, which is Saturday night. I won't get to the hotel until about midnight. Probably go for a walk tomorrow around Shanghai. Go to the Bund, which is kind of along the water there. It's, if you see any pictures of Shanghai, that's what you're going to see. But then Monday through Thursday, we're jammed with meetings every day, starting early, going late, and then flying home on Friday.
Oh, man, that sounds like now meetings all day, but then like dinners at night. You get out with the clients and with the people, or is it just all day at the plant and then you're exhausted and you pass out in the room and get up and do it again the next day?
No, there'll be dinners. I'm traveling with a team right now, my client team. I've got a person from Italy, person from Germany, a couple guys from the U.S., a guy from China. We'll grab dinner a couple nights this week. I don't know that we have any client dinners planned right now, quite honestly, but we're, you know, at the end of the day, we kind of need to debrief on our own and then get ready for the next day. So it's not. This is going to be a tough week. This is going to be a tough week for us.
It sounds all glamorous, but that doesn't sound like a ton of fun. So
No.
Sorry about that. Then you head home for a few days, and then you're off again?
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, I was saying this flight, my next flight is my 80th flight this year.
How many miles this year? How many air miles?
I will be, I'm close to 200,000 this year.
That's crazy. Crazy. All right. Well, Wally, be safe. Yep. Have fun. Take some good pictures like you always do. And we'll talk to you again in a couple
Thanks,
of weeks.
Man.
Thanks for checking in. We appreciate
Sounds
it.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, Wally.
Okay.
Cheers. Have a good
Bye-bye.
Time. Our friend Wally, the international traveler, you know, normally it sounds like, oh, it's cool. He went here, he went there, he's going to festivals, he's seeing things. This sounds like it's going to be a little bit of a long week for Wally. So, Wally, Got to earn the money, got to earn the bread. But man, sometimes it sounds more fun than other times, right? 312-981-7200 is the number. We're coming up on the 4 o'clock news in just a minute here on 720 WGN. John McCain lying in state. The funeral's today. We'll talk a little bit more about lying in state and what that means after we check the news. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say, play WGN Radio on TuneIn 401 in the morning. Here's the news with Roger. Napa Bala with you. 720 WGN 409 in the morning, everybody. Good morning. Those of you just rolling out of bed and getting your Labor Day Saturday started with lots of work around the house. Not going to be able to get outside maybe as much as you wanted because, as Roger said, the storm should be heading our way around 11 a.m. You think everybody's traveling just? A lot of people getting on the roads right now? Or did they leave late last night? Yesterday afternoon? Things like that.
Well, it took me like an hour and 15 minutes just to get home from work yesterday.
How far do you normally live from work?
Like 30 to 40 minutes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, I imagine the roads were probably a mess yesterday afternoon.
It was very busy.
I believe it. The big highlight, television highlight for today. Well, I don't know if it's a television highlight, but there will be the service for John McCain. I'm actually planning on taping it. I do want to hear the speeches that George W. Bush and President Obama give at the service today. I think it'll be interesting to see how they honor John McCain. I was looking up, so he's lying in state at the U.S. Capitol, and I'm wondering how common that is or you know, how often that happens. According to history.house.gov, since Henry Clay in 1852, the U.S. Capitol Rotunda has been used as a place to pay tribute to the nation's most distinguished citizens. Made available for public viewing in the rotunda, persons who have lain in state traditionally have been American statesmen and military leaders, including 11 U.S. presidents. In 1998, to recognize two Capitol police officers who died in the line of duty, Congress granted the use of the rotunda for their caskets to lie in honor. For a complete list of individuals, yada, yada. So recently, laying in state, which is what John McCain is doing, he's laying in state. The last person, I believe, who laid in state in the Capitol Rotunda would be Senator Daniel K. Inouye.
Inouye, California.
So that was in 2012. So it's been 6 years.
When
since
did
somebody
Reverend,
laid in state, Reverend Graham laid in honor.
Honor, okay.
Different one. Individuals who have lain in honor, Billy Graham, okay. That was just earlier this year.
Yeah.
Rosa Parks mm-hmm. in 2005. And then these two Capitol police officers in 1998.
Okay.
Recent laying in state, we had Senator, how did you pronounce his name?
Inouye.
In 2012, President Ford in 2007, and President Reagan in 2004. Mm. So it does not happen often.
No. I'm surprised. I don't know why. I always thought it was always laying in state, but this is the first I'm hearing the distinction, or I heard the distinction before and just never paid attention to it.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Laying
so
in honor.
Laying in honor.
Okay.
And laying in state. And it sounds like, or looks like, from what I see, mm-hmm. Laying in state would have to be, I believe, some sort of politician or former politician.
Yeah.
Otherwise, laying in honor.
And that would make sense because it's their building.
Yeah, so the you House know. Decides that?
I'm not sure. What does it say? You got it pulled up there on the screen? Who decides who gets to...
Well, this is on...
does it take a vote
this is on
of Congress?
History of the United States House of Representatives.
Matt is now reading
yeah,
the
playing
entry.
Yeah, I'm playing the Roger.
Thank you.
I'm going to look this up. Funerals in the House chamber. Under the current House Rule 4, the House chamber may only be used for legislative functions, conference meetings, and caucus meetings unless the House agrees to take part in a ceremony. Earlier in House history, however, the chamber also served as a place to memorialize representatives who died in office. United States Capitol Rotunda is known widely as a space where the nation pays tribute to its most revered citizens whose bodies lie in state or in honor in that room. Comparatively little is known about the funerals that took place in the hall of the House. So this is about funerals there.
Hmm.
But I do not know how they decide...
Doesn't say anything about who decides it?
Not in this.
Interesting. That is interesting. Are you looking up the Wikipedia thing or no? And I hate to say Wikipedia.
I know, because that sounds bad.
I know. Shouldn't be doing the Wikipedia. But actually, if people... I know you can put whatever you want on Wikipedia, pretty much. It does go through a process of review, and that's why it's kind of like a term paper. So anyone who's ever done a term paper, you have had to do footnotes to justify where you got that information from that you're claiming. And you put the footnotes at the bottom of the page or at the end of the paper. And that's what Wikipedia is. And if you ever read a sentence or two in a Wikipedia entry, and there's that little blue number in brackets at the end of it, down at the bottom are the footnotes. It shows where that information was gotten. Right. That's where you go to double check that it's legitimate information. So if you take the time in Wikipedia to do your research,
you can still find pretty
good stuff. Yeah, it's an excellent source of information.
According to USA Today, Senator John McCain will lie in state at the U.S. Capitol on Friday, a rare honor bestowed on only 31 people in 166 years. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced the decision of congressional leaders from both parties Sunday, calling McCain a great American patriot, a statesman who put his country first and enriched this institution through many years of service. So it sounds like maybe House and Senate leaders get together. Because it's at the Capitol where both the House and Senate are, right? Everybody's there. So it's not like the House gets to rule the building, I would imagine, right?
Actually, lying in state is an international occurrence. And it differs from country to country.
Well, I would imagine it does. Interesting. But how do we decide it?
It's not automatic. Not all those entitled to the honor have it accepted by their survivors, which is interesting. Is as follow. Well, that's the process. They're showing about what actually happens when it happens. Yeah, you're right. Lane in honor. Oh, and here's another one. Lane in repose.
Oh, what's that one?
Supreme Court justices. Oh, but that's in the Supreme Court building. That's not in Congress. And those are deceased Supreme Court justices. Yeah, so you know what? For the United States entry, it really doesn't...
Well, it says, by regulation and custom, only presidents, military commanders, and members of Congress are granted the honor of lying in state. Except for presidents and former presidents, the honor is not automatic. The first leader, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but we also got some military leaders.
Well, it says...
John J. Pershing, the unknown soldiers for World War I, World War II, and the Korean War.
Right. Well, it says, by regulation and custom, only presidents, military commanders, and members of Congress are granted the honor of lying in state.
Right.
But it doesn't exactly say how they decide it. It doesn't say if there's a vote or, you know, is there a committee that decides it or how does that work?
Well, it's here's the one about laying in honor. And it's talking about those two police officers. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Congress approved that their remains to lie in honor in the rotunda. So I guess it's a congressional vote, just like any bill that would come up. You would take you would propose it, and you would take a vote. And
I think there was a quick vote on that.
Well,
they're not even. Are they even in session right now?
I think they might be in summer recess.
Let's go to the text line. 219 says,
Okay. I tried to call. Building belongs to the U.S. House of Representatives. It's in the Constitution. They're in charge of all those buildings. Mm-hmm. They're in charge of also all post offices and post roads, ingress and egress to the postal roads. And they're also in charge of immigration, of which they don't do anything about it right yeah. now. It says right in the Constitution. Okay.
All right.
So Mitch McConnell announced it. Leaders of both parties, he said, agreed to it. We don't know the exact process for how they get there. Either way, John McCain is lying in state. He will have his funeral today, and President George W. Bush and President Obama will both deliver eulogies.
Oh, here we go. So I was right. These occasions are either authorized by a congressional resolution or approved by the congressional leadership. That's what you just said, right?
Yeah.
Congressional leaders, when permission is granted by survivors. Hmm.
So not a full vote, just no. leadership has to yeah. say, hey, we'd like to
yeah.
do this.
Yeah.
And then they agree.
Okay. That's from a government site.
Coverage begins on CNN at 7 a.m. today. But I imagine the funeral's not until around noon our time, or is it around 10 a.m. our time?
Are you talking about the central time?
Yeah. When is John McCain's funeral start, do you know? It looks like it starts around 9 a.m. our time, I think, today.
Tick, tick. Funeral 22 hours ago. What?
2 hours ago? We missed it?
Oh, here we go. No, I'm looking at when the posts were.
Daylight savings time.
Yeah. I'm going to smack
it. It's going to stay savings in my
book. Wednesday, Lion State, the U.S. Capitol. I know. Just stop.
It's getting close.
I know. It's in your neighborhood. And then there's another service, the actual burial, the U.S. Naval Academy.
That's the next day.
Yeah.
But what time does it start today?
You know what? These don't even say.
Okay. We'll find it.
Yeah.
It'll be there.
All right.
All right. We got to take a quick break. We got news coming up. More to do. 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 424 in the morning. Happy September 1st to you, everybody. We have made it, what, two-thirds through the year, Raj?
Wow.
We're in the final third.
Wonders will never cease.
Okay. You didn't think we're going to make it this far?
I take it one day at a time, baby. I like it.
Oh,
it's right. Football season now.
It is football season now. And the Wildcats, did you watch any of that game the other night?
Go Cats. I listened to some of it when I was out and about taking care of business.
Poor Dave Ennett. I didn't get to hear the broadcast. We were watching on, we're flipping between the Cubs, the Bears,
the Sox
and
Northwestern.
And Northwestern yeah. tonight. So it was a busy TV night. And that stupid football game was like 4 freaking yeah, hours long.
It was long.
Why was that? Was it because ESPN did they take 8-minute breaks?
I don't know.
Oh, my
I
gosh.
Really don't know, but I was surprised when I was driving home after bowling. That
was at halftime, or
no?
I mean, it was no, 2 hours.
It was just finishing. It was just finishing, and I didn't leave until 10:45.
Literally, the first half was 2 hours long.
Yeah,
2 hours.
Well, there was a lot of scoring, but I don't think that would make that much difference.
No, I don't know if there were like a million incomplete passes, or if ESPN just made them take really long breaks because it was a kickoff.
Were there a lot of first half penalties?
Not that I recall. Northwestern goes up to a quick 14-0 lead, gives it right back. It's 14-14. Then I think each team kicks field goal. The Northwestern scores a couple more touchdowns. It's 31-17.
Right.
Then it's 31-24. I forget what the final score is. It might have ended up there. I think there was like no scoring in the fourth quarter after all that scoring earlier in the game. But it was going into the fourth.
It was like three and outs, a bunch of that.
It's after 10 o'clock, and it's just starting the fourth quarter, and Jack's sitting there. I'm like, you got to go to bed. He's like, I want to finish the game. I'm like, it's not going to be over until midnight. I'm not staying up. Get the heck out of here.
Yeah, we had a problem at the bowling alley. We were on the very last two lanes, and there was a TV two lanes over, but it was on the other side of the overhang wall. So we'd have to, like, walk over to see whatever was on there facing the other way away from us. The closest TV that we could see without having to move around, we needed binoculars to see it. It was that far away. And so every TV in the place had something different. Like you said, there were 4 sporting events going on. You know, just crazy. And I bowled like crap
again. No, I'm sorry. Hey, why do you, by the way, thank you, Papanino's again. You got pizza. How much, you said you were going to buy pizza until money ran out that you won last year. There's no way you still have money for
that
this.
Ran out a long time ago.
Well, then quit buying the pizza.
No, I like doing it.
Roger, you got to stop.
I like doing it.
You're paying all that money for parking now. You should.
I know. I like doing it.
You know what? Save the money for Disney World.
I know.
Put the pizza money in the Disney World fund. Justin and I will pick up the pizza.
But I can't let you keep doing it. You used to buy. You bought it forever and ever.
I know. But
and I felt bad about that.
But don't feel bad about that.
I do.
Let's go back to that.
Okay.
I'd rather you take the grandkids to Disney World.
All right. I'll start putting the money away then.
Okay, good.
All right.
So here's something I don't know that I want to wade into, but I guess I'm going to wade into it. Louis C.K.
Mm-hmm.
Comedian who's honestly whose stuff I don't know that well. I know he had a show on FX called Louie. He's had stand-up specials.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I don't know him that well either, to be honest with you.
I think I don't know the humor that well. And I never like sought out and found him. So I know he's out there.
Right.
And I know he kind of later in life really hit it. I think he had been a comedian forever. Hitting the road and doing what comedians do.
Mm-hmm.
But only in the last like 5 years did he become a household name, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And then when, you know, things started getting revealed in the last year of in the Me Too movement and people finding the ability to speak up about what has happened to them with Harvey Weinstein and many, 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 many others. Long rumored stories about Louis C.K. became public. And he admitted very quickly that he that these were true stories, that he would masturbate in front of, and I never got this, I never understood this, but he would masturbate in front of people. That was his
what?
Thing. Oh, you don't remember this story?
No. I mean, I knew there were, excuse me, I knew that there were issues, but I didn't delve into the details because I didn't need to know. I just heard that he was kind of creepy and that, and then he stopped performing.
Yeah.
And so, and since he wasn't in my wheelhouse to start with, it just, you know, I didn't pay attention to the details. I didn't need to. I didn't feel I needed to.
Yeah, it was weird. Here's the story from the New York Times from last year. In 2002, a Chicago comedy duo, Dana Min Goodman and Julia Wolof, landed their big break. A chance to perform at the U.S. Comedy Arts Festival in Aspen, Colorado. When Louis C.K. invited them to hang out in his hotel room for a nightcap after their late-night show, they did not think twice. The bars were closed and they wanted to celebrate. He was a comedian they admired. The women would be together. His intentions seemed collegial. As soon as they sat down in his room, still wrapped in their winter jackets and hats, Louis C.K. asked if he could take out his penis, the women said.
Jeez.
They thought it was a joke and laughed it off. And then he really did it. Mrs. Goodman said in an interview with the New York Times, he proceeded to take all of his clothes off, got completely naked, and started masturbating. In 2003, Abby Schachner called Louis C.K. to invite him to one of her shows, and during the phone conversation, she said she could hear him masturbating as they spoke. Another comedian, Rebecca Corey, said that while she was appearing with Louis C.K. on a television pilot in 2005, he asked if he could masturbate in front of her. She declined. Now, after years of unsubstantiated rumors about Louis C.K. doing this in front of associates, women are coming forward to describe what they experienced. Even amid the current burst of sexual misconduct accusations against powerful men, the stories about Louis C.K. stand out because he has so few equals in comedy. In the years since the incidents the women describe, he has sold out Madison Square Garden 8 times, created an Emmy-winning TV series, and accumulated the clout of a tastemaker and auteur with the help of a manager who represents some of the biggest names in comedy. And Louis C.K. built a reputation as the unlikely conscience of the comedy scene by making audiences laugh about hypocrisy, especially male hypocrisy. After being contacted for an interview this week about the on-the-record accusations and encounters that took place over a decade ago, Louis C.K.'s publicist, Louis K., said the comedian would not respond. Louis is not going to answer any questions. Neither Louis C.K. or Mr. Blah, blah, blah responded. This was when his I Love You, Daddy movie was Thursday, the premiere of Louis' new movie, I Love You, Daddy, was abruptly canceled. He also canceled an appearance on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And then he admitted that he did do these things. And here's what he performed this week for the first time since all of that. At the time after the New York Times released that, he finally released a statement, I believe a few days later, said, these stories are true. At the time, I said to myself that what I did was okay because I never showed a woman my blank without asking first, which is also true. But what I learned later in life, too late, is that when you have power over another person, asking them to look at your blank isn't a question. It's a predicament for them. The power I had over these women is that they admired me, and I wielded that power irresponsibly. I can't find if there are other things, if he hurt people's careers, if he kept them back because they knew about these things or anything like that. I don't know that there's anything like that. He was a creep. He was disgusting and gross and weird.
Yeah.
Now he performed 9 months later, and some people are very upset about that, that he's back out there as if he got a little time out and now he gets to be back. And the question becomes, I apologized. I went and got some help. I don't know what he did or what he said.
Is there a statute of limitations?
Well,
I don't think so.
He didn't go to jail. He wasn't prosecuted. I guess theoretically, I don't know if he technically committed a crime. You could say, well, that's really vile what he did, and that would be agreed upon by, I think, just about anyone, and weird as hell. But he didn't commit a crime.
No one's filed suit against him.
I don't believe lawsuits were filed against him. And I don't know if he paid people off to be quiet. But at what point do you say, hey, he can go out and perform. You don't have to go see him. If you are disgusted by what he did, don't support him. Don't watch his shows. Don't buy his specials. Don't go buy a ticket to see him.
But
level do we accredit that at? I'll tell you what. Let's get to your news before we get too late, and then we'll talk about that after that. And if you have a comment on that as well, I'd love to hear it. 312-981-7200. First, the headlines. Here's Roger Badish. 4:38 in the morning, 720 WGN. Matt Bubali with you here until 5 a.m. Got Orion coming up with the morning show in just a little bit. We'll check in with him before we get out of here.
It's in Madison now, too.
Well, that's far north.
I know.
It's a wide-ranging show.
It actually goes all the way up to La Crosse.
But it's this is a storm, right?
Yeah. Well, we'll got
some
again.
Lightning. We'll see some.
We'll see some lightning. The winds will pick up. We will see portions that are extremely heavy. Then some lighter drizzle might clear up once in a while. As it's spreading out, there's some breaks in it, but there are still some very heavy sections of rain embedded in this storm.
Earlier this week, I think it was on Tuesday night, we had a curriculum night up at Jack's High School in Woodstock.
Oh.
And we get out of that, and it starts pouring.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was starting to drive home, and we were on like two-lane roads way up there.
Right.
It's coming down so hard that I actually turned on, I'd never do this, I turned the wipers on full speed.
Right.
That whoosh, 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 whoosh,
right.
Which I never think seems to help. It's just like now it's a distraction that these things are flying by your face so often. But it was that bad. And like literally where I was staying behind, I would find a car to be behind. So I knew that it was because it was dark. There is on roads without street lights, two lanes where you don't know. It was coming down so hard. You could see where it's going to be a flash flood. You're going to drive into something, and get your car caught.
Right.
So I was making sure to stay behind people. I have not driven in weather that bad in 20, 30 years. I think it was crazy.
Actually, coming in tonight on Lakeshore Drive, it was bad and it got. The worst part of it was...
It was raining when you were driving here tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
It had already started raining.
That's right.
It had already started raining at Sox Park. Because when I left the house, they had just gone into a rain delay.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I got to Belmont, driving south on Lakeshore Drive, that's when the rain started up on the north side.
Interesting.
And it was very heavy for a while. Then it eased up a little bit. And then it got heavy again as I came up over the Chicago River to make that first turn off after the river to come around on Michigan and come back around to our place here. And it was so bad there. I did what you just said you did. I turned the wipers on the fastest. Unfortunately, there was a car in front of me that had its flashers going for what reason, I don't know. And was going about 10 miles an hour.
Because they were scared, maybe.
They were scared. They were all the way over on the right, which is fine. Everyone could pass them. And, you know, in that section, there was all that new construction. So now we're down to like 2-3 lanes, depending where we were. And all of a sudden, as we started going up over the bridge, that guy starts drifting left. All the way across, not with a plan, not like, oh, I'm going to get out of the way of this baddish guy behind me. No. He just started drifting. I'm going, this guy does not know where he is right now. He really didn't know where he was, and I stayed behind him because I didn't know what he was going to do.
Yeah, it's always tough to decide, all right, do I stay behind or do I try to find an opening and get around
this person
before they get me involved in it?
Yeah, it's, well, he was going to get someone else in an accident because he just kept drifting left.
Yeah.
He did not, he lost where he was. He had been, he had his eye, apparently, he had his eye on the white dotted line on his left, and the rain started to come down so bad as we got up over the bridge, I think he just lost, he couldn't see where he was. Very scary.
Yeah, that's not good.
No.
Not good. All right, so we'll check in with Orion in a little bit. Maybe he's out in Huntley. He can tell us how the weather is out there. But real quick before we go, a little bit more on this. So Louis C.K., and I don't know, because somebody on Twitter last night wrote, multiple women, Louis C.K. pulled his blank out in front of, lost opportunities to pursue their careers because this guy and his enablers wanted to keep them quiet. Now, I didn't read that in any other story, but if that's out there, that's different to me. I know that sounds maybe crazy that he did these weird sexual things, and I'm not saying he should be forgiven for them, but at what point is it acceptable that he is out there pursuing his career again? Whether or not people enable him by buying, by seeing, by doing, or supporting, I think that's everybody's right now to do that. I think that, you know, he's out there trying to make his living, and, you know, he's already rich. He can say, well, he doesn't need to. He's already, you know, some people wrote, oh, so the millionaire took 9 months off and now he gets to come back. I understand both sides of that equation. I really do. But what's interesting to me is, where's the backlash when a Woody Allen movie comes out? And there is some, but there's not much. And Roman Polanski's been making great movies for years. Mm-hmm. So some people, for some reason, get away with things, and some people don't. And it's interesting that it's so hard to say, do we put levels? You know, Matt Damon tried to make this point earlier last year, came off sounding like an idiot and really got torn apart for it after the Harvey Weinstein stuff came out, saying that, you know, not everything that somebody does that's bad behavior is criminal. He said something along those lines, and he got a lot of heat for it. But what Louis C.K. has done is not what Bill Cosby was doing, is not what Harvey Weinstein was doing. So, well, is there a delineation? Is there a place where we say, okay, this is unacceptable, this is criminal, this is really bad, and I hope you got some help, and if you try to come back, that's fine, but I don't know who's necessarily going to support you or not. I don't know.
Well, I see what you're saying. I think it's all wrong, period. It just, there's no levels, my personal opinion. It's all wrong. Now, I see the point you're making when you compare him against a Cosby or a Weinstein, who actually, there was physical interaction. And in the case of Weinstein, it was power, mad power. I just have this level of, it's all wrong.
I mean, it is all wrong,
you know,
but is that
so,
how we do it? We just sweep it all as that's wrong and get rid of them, and that's... I don't...
I mean, here...
I don't want to be defending Louis C.K. I mean, what he did was... And it's so... Like, when that story came out, I'm like, he did what?
Yeah.
That's a thing that people want to do that? Why? And Weinstein did that crap, too, to people.
Yeah, but he had more power. I mean, it was...
He did,
he used that power.
He did, but I don't know that Louis C.K. wasn't sort of in the same way doing that. That these women were like, well, crap, this guy can make or break my career. I imagine that's a very tough position to be in. When it's somebody who's a huge star, you're not, you want to be.
Right.
You know, it's just like with Harvey Weinstein. Now, Harvey had more power to maybe end a career or, you know, and he did to people.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I guess there's nowhere to go with that except time will tell what happens in these situations. But it's weird that some people just, Woody Allen just keeps making movies.
True.
And the interesting thing about that is Ronan Farrow, who is his son, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ronan Farrow's the son that people, the rumors were about, is he really Frank Sinatra's son and not Woody Allen's son, correct?
I haven't heard those.
Yeah,
it's
those
possible, but
yeah. Anyways.
I don't follow the gossip stuff.
Oh, you're missing out. I'm joking. You're not missing out at all. Next week on the show, besides Grant Shabanaducci and the tale of the night we spent together, our favorite would-be wannabe Martian, Sonja Van Meter. We first met her years ago because one of those crazy companies that planned to send people to Mars had asked for applications. Thousands and thousands of people applied, and she was one of 100 finalists to take a one-way trip to Mars and live out her life there.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, that company found out they need about $8 billion, and I don't think they're anywhere close. So her plans are on hold, but she is a political person. She does opposition research, and we've had her on Talking Politics from time to time. And now, let's face it, we're really close to November, and things are getting crazy heated up.
Mm-hmm.
The Florida governor's race is going to be very interesting to watch.
Yep.
There's an African-American Democrat and a regular old white Republican, I guess you would say, running against each other. The Republican candidate this week, speaking about his opponent, said, "We don't want to monkey up this race."
Yeah, I saw that.
And then his defender said, "Oh, it's crazy to think that that had anything to do with race." And it's just crazy to me that if it had nothing to do with race, how would you possibly, in 2018, make that as an offhand comment?
Yeah. Where did that phraseology come from? Because I've never heard of it before.
I don't know. I don't know if that is a phrase. And you could see, you know, listen, we've always had monkey in the middle, which I didn't assume had any racial tones. I don't think it does. But we have five monkeys jumping on the bed, which is a favorite kid book. So maybe there are references to monkeys make a mess of things. You know, monkeys in a room or, you know, crazy,
not monkey
right?
up. You screw but, up. You screw up. That's the phrase.
Maybe. So
with the
say,
word up or...
Let's say monkey up is a phrase. Let's assume for one second that it actually is an actual phrase.
All right.
You still have more sense than to make what could be deemed a racial slur about your opponent.
Hmm.
You have more sense in 2018 than that. That's not
one would think.
One would think. That's the phrase of 2018. One would think.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. We'll say hi to Owen a little bit here on 720 WGN. 4:53 in the morning. Matt Brabala here with you for a few more minutes on 720 WGN. Live from Huntley this morning, it's going to be Orion Samuelson with the morning show. Good morning, Big O. How are you, sir?
Well, doing fine, and came through a very busy week. We had, of course, the big show, the granddaddy of all the farm shows out at Boone, Iowa, and it got rained out the first day, but sunshine and breezes came the second day, and that was good. We got out there for that. Of course, Labor Day weekend, we've got Jim Fazell is going to be talking about farmers markets, because this is probably the best time of the year to go to farmers markets. All of the produce is locally grown and produced on farms. And we're going to spend a fair amount of time this morning sharing the comments of Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue, who joined Max and me on stage at the Farm Progress Show at noon on Wednesday. We had a great time. Outside of the bad flying weather for Air Orion on Tuesday that kept us on the ground, because there was a line of thunderstorms that just laid east to west right on our route from Huntley out to Boone. So we said, no, not a good day to put Air Orion in the air today. So
did you drive or did you wait a day?
We waited a day, okay. And the next morning had a little cloud cover and a little sprinkle of rain, but by the time we crossed the Mississippi heading for Boone, skies cleared up and a good crowd for the day, because there, well, were people like the Secretary of Agriculture on the grounds, and of course, millions of dollars worth of equipment for farmers and technology for farmers, and it's for many people, a once-a-year reunion with friends that they only see at the show. So, yeah. But there were the people there from China, from Japan, from South America, from Europe, as well as probably 40 of the states here in the United States. They all turned out for the Farm Progress Show that, started with Prairie Farmer magazine back in the 50s and still going.
Wow. Hey, I have to ask you, because I can't imagine that your paths didn't cross many times over the years. Had you met and interviewed or talked to at some point Senator McCain?
Yes, I had. I had visited with him twice, but the impression that I've never forgotten, my first trip as a news person to Vietnam after the war ended, we went to Hanoi, and I went to the Hanoi Hilton where the U.S. prisoners, including Mr. McCain, were kept. And when I stood in the cell room where he spent 6 years of his life, with a concrete slab about 2 feet above the floor and ankle chains and wrist chains to keep him there on his back, and he put up with that for 6 years, I thought, man, this is some human being. And, he could have left. I think his father was an admiral in the Navy, and he had the opportunity to get out, but he wouldn't leave his fellow prisoners. And then later on, of course, after I built a home in Arizona, got to see him a couple of times and talked to him. And Barry Goldwater and Senator McCain were two of my favorite Arizona people to at least say hello to and visit with. So.
Yeah, it's a great loss, and the funeral service will be today. George W. Bush and President Obama both will be giving eulogies, and I'm very interested to see it. He was, whether you agreed with his politics or not, there is certainly somebody who seemed to put country first, and one of the last people who you can remember reaching, gave his concession speech, and what he said was a type of unifying, now that we're hearing it again, was unifying in a way that we don't hear people talk these days.
Well, that's very true. And, regardless of how you felt about his politics, and the people in Arizona were rather strongly mixed on that. Some really liked him, some didn't like him at all. But for a human being to do what he did and survive his time as a prisoner of war, I just have the greatest admiration.
Yeah, yep. Yep, not a lot of people like John McCain, so he'll get a proper send-off today, as he's been getting this week. And then it'll be interesting. And out in Arizona, there's some pretty contentious races going on now.
Really?
And now they have to figure out how they're going to finish out his term. Do you think it's a possibility Mrs. McCain will take that seat, or how do you think that's going to play out?
I don't think that will happen, but I'm not a political expert, so
sure.
I don't know. It would, I suppose, for the Republicans be a good move to get somebody in that seat before the election so they can run, as much as possible for the seat. But I don't know if she'll accept that or not.
Well, and he wasn't due this time around. So whoever they put in the seat will have it, I think, for 2 years, I think. I need to check in on that, but it'll be interesting to see what happens, because like you said, while McCain is revered nationally within the state, there's been a lot of divisiveness, and he probably currently wasn't quite as popular as he was, say, 10 years ago, right?
Oh, no, I don't think he was. He did have his detractors, yes.
Yeah, especially with the immigration issues and how hot button of a topic that has become. All right, sir, I'm going to get out of the way. You have a great show. We'll be listening to you all the way home.
Have a good day.